Blog Talk Radio.
You brought too many.
We'll be right back.
Show number 1,362. Welcome as we get ready to sit down and get down with the chefs for 2+ hours and change. Courtesy of your loving mad scientists and everybody here at Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, singer of DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is wonderful being with you. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com. Home of the assassin of the Black Athletes Sports Network. Get all the good shit. The who, what, when, where, why, and how right now at www.basnnewsroomalloneframe.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network. Ready to do our thing here. All the members there in Radio Reggie out of Richmond, Virginia. The Orlando Ledbetter and Cheryl Jones out of Philadelphia. My man Ricky Hampton Sr. out of Detroit. And Mike Robeson in Oakland, California. Co-hosts of the African American Athlete Show. Good listen. 9 p.m. Tuesdays. Check them out. You will be pleasantly surprised. And check out their website, theafricanamericanathlete.com. Of course, Pat Freeman, who we will have on Saturday to discuss his new book, The Art of the Interview, Part 1. And the chefs will be checking in from time to time. Now tonight, we should have a special guest among us, and she's not a guest, but she's family. But Rhonda Harper has been away on assignment, extended assignment. She has been down to the motherland doing her thing. And we will have Rhonda come in here around 9:30 and just run things. And she fills us up and regales it with tales of the motherland and the things that she has endured and overcome as the CEO of Africa Surf. With me, my brother Tony McLean. What's cooking, T?
How are you, man?
I'm good. And some additional spice on top of the cake seems the HBCU flavor has now spread to Delicious Dion. Oh, to the new head coach, Edible Eddie, of Tennessee State. Now, I'm not saying one's trying to emulate the other or anything like that, but I prefer emulation to duplication. But with Eddie George having put all this time in desiring to coach, I'm more surprised, Tony, by the fact that they keep saying, like, we didn't know he wanted to coach. Hello?
And, oh, by the way, he's hired, I might as well keep in the theme here, Huggable Hugh Jackson as his offensive coordinator.
I love it.
But it's interesting. Now, here's the other side. Groucho, the one and only Groucho, Jeff Fisher, is also it's under the guise of a consultant.
Oh, no.
But see, again, as I told someone online yesterday, just keep his ass away from a headset and you'll be fine.
So, yeah, you ain't kidding. That kind of throws me a little bit. I understand why he may like Fisher, because Fisher kept feeding him the rock, even when he shouldn't have sometimes. But there's nothing that Jeff Fisher has done in his NFL career that would make me think he would be able to teach anyone.
True.
Just with his own petty mindset.
True. But, you know, again, I guess because he has probably more respect for Fisher than Fisher has for him. But
really?
The cynic in this would say, well, this has cost another, you know, possibly long-time HBCU guy who would want that job this possible. And
mm-hmm.
And yeah, I get it. But you know, what's interesting is that I got to disagree with you a little bit. I don't think this is a Dion thing. I think this is an overall sports thing because
okay.
I think this is more of a Juwan Howard thing, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Indiana just basically brought Mike Woodson home, which I think is
mm-hmm.
a great hire. I think he's going to do very well there.
I thought he could coach, yeah.
If they leave mm-hmm. him the hell alone, but then that's always the
yeah.
Big, yeah. And also, I don't know if you heard, Speedy Claxton is now coaching at his alma mater now in Hofstra.
Wow.
So, yeah, yeah. So this has been, you know, the funny thing is I want to say it was maybe 10, 15 years ago when Houston,
mm-hmm.
University of Houston brought Clyde Drexler in to head coach.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Didn't work out very well, to say the least. To,
mm-hmm.
Say the least. But with now, a lot of, you know, when Howard was hired, there were a lot of, you know, can he recruit? Can he did, you know.
Yeah.
When the brother gets hired, all of a sudden, you know, there's all sorts of questions, you know, all sorts
mm-hmm.
of problems. But needless to say, Juwan has resurrected the program. He's, you know, he's brought in recruits, and they got
mm-hmm.
within a game of the Final Four. So, you know, they can kiss the fattest part of his butt
right.
as far as I'm concerned. So, and now I just think, you know, again, just going with how things have gone over the last couple of years. Now, granted, Deion has been, I guess, the most hyped one. But
yeah.
I think this is coming
mm-hmm.
more of an overall trend. And I guess you can also sort of throw in the coach for Arizona, the Arizona women.
That's
true. Former WNBA
yep.
player. So as much as Deion might be a part of this, I don't think he's the whole focus. I think this is something that that overall colleges have had and are looking at. I, you know, it's sort of easy to say because Eddie gets hired at TSU, oh, you know, he's
yeah.
there following the Jackson.
Oh, no, I can buy what you're saying, Tony, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and I got Gary and Reggie in the mix here, but fellas, riddle me this, because I'm getting the vibe that they're starting to equate the coaching positions, especially the college ones, as being akin with management. And very often the employees, while they were making the money, they didn't give a shit about management. They just wanted to go on ahead. College is a different situation, of course, because they're not getting paid. So does any of this smack like that?
It's definitely a part. Put it this way. You know how for the longest time we always talked about how the NFL is a copycat league? You know, like
right.
when Gibbs, you know, when Gibbs went to the one back offense, all of a sudden everybody, you know, had the H back
right.
and all the other stuff. You know, when Swartz was doing the quote unquote West Coast offense, all of a sudden everybody and their mama came up with their own version of the West Coast offense as
yep.
well. I just, you know, Deion's
mm-hmm.
a factor in this, but I can't. But I just think this is just an overall college's thing. But, you know, in many ways, and you know, I'm wondering if, and I know this, you know, I know it may be stretching it a bit. I'm wondering because of COVID and because of the more free time that folks have had, in a sense, where they
yep.
really went out and looked and saw who's really out there. Because, see, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that there's a group of people that said, I didn't know Eddie George wanted to coach. And I remember him mentioning that several times when he played, that he said, yeah, he
mm-hmm.
because he, you got to remember, he comes from, you know, remember, he went to Fort Union. Was it Fort Union as a football, you know, before he went to Ohio State. So
that's right.
There was always that sort of mentoring gene in him, I feel. So, mm-hmm. again, I think the fact that there was people out there that didn't know that he could coach, again, I just think that that's a black folks, white folks thing where, you know, where white folks literally have no clue about what we're doing or what we're thinking. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think that and because of the success of a lot of these former professional players turned coaches for either their alma mater or for other places, I think, like, maybe we need to give them a shot. Now,
Tony and Mike.
Yep.
Also, you got to think about Terry, too. Monetarily, these guys are getting a pay cut.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's part of what this is about, too.
Yeah, but it's also a thing where to be fair, we asked, you know, we've talked about from day one in regards, especially with Deion and JSU, who approached who. And again, you got to ask that again here in a sense with Eddie George that, you know, who
that
came
sense.
To, you know, again, it's, you know, with something like this, I always try to look at big picture. I always try to get inside what there's, you know, what he or him or she and her are thinking in regards to these hires. More so in college, like you said, Mike, than the pros, because let's face it, you got boosters, you got all the other perfunctory things, and let's be honest, the hiring practices of black men, especially in college football, albeit non-HBCU.
Very bad, very bad.
It's worse. You can't get anything worse. I mean, even they could say, you know, even the NFL can sort of say, damn, they're awful, you know, with their hiring practice.
Well, T, can you explain to me, Mr. Davis, North Carolina men's basketball coach, press conference? When he goes out and says, well, I know I'm the fourth black and I'm so excited, but I got a European wife. Now, before people start acting crazy, ain't nobody give a fuck about who his wife was.
You know what? That's a Hubert Davis thing. I don't know, because it's North Carolina. They're gonna get players. It's not like people are gonna stop coming to North Carolina.
Well,
my issue is that you're gonna see
a lot of guys, and not that he's been recruiting, but they're gonna say, if this man don't be proud to be a black man and he's promoting white swimming racism, now people might say, oh, Reggie, here you go playing the race car.
I'm
saying no fucking that. I'm saying right now, my humble opinion. Now, just give me 1 minute. I'm just saying my humble opinion that if you see this man placating to white supremacy and racism, then why in the fuck if I'm a father, I'm gonna go ahead and show myself to this clown when he's gonna sit up here and try to push the narrative that the Europeans are superior to us, and I'm not gonna sit up here and fight for your kid getting a certain situation. I guarantee you, I've heard certain sports shows already where certain former players and AU coaches are saying, fuck him. I'm not sending my kid to him, no matter what.
Well, I don't blame him. I don't blame him either. And Mike, I think that could just even help the HBCUs more. Maybe not directly, but.
Oh, I agree. No. That's Reggie Brooks, the alleged superiority. But the real deal is he killed the illusion. You know, you got the impression from all the years of watching North Carolina basketball and professors in the house that these people were somewhat intelligent. We thought that they were nothing else basketball smart. And Mr. Davis made us question that. We're bringing up that issue the way he brought it up. It was flat out stupid.
What David did. David wanted to be accepted by Northern Ontario alumni.
Well, he don't know his history. He don't know his damn history. And look, when you come to John B. McClendon, you come to Big House Games and a plus of other people, they lay the foundation. So
Reggie, it's even worse than that. All he has to do is look at his freaking family tree. Walter Davis, hello?
But
don't
worry about
it.
Again,
we won a good old boy. That ain't a good old boy. I'm sorry.
The sad thing is, Reggie, end of the day, Rick James is a liar. Cocaine ain't a drug. Self-hate is a hell of a drug. Why would that even be a factor?
Thank you. Nobody asked about it.
That's what bothers me most about this.
Y'all
should be shaming yourself. Have you all been watching Carolina basketball? With the sound in the picture,
I don't even watch it with the picture on.
Well, okay, have you all not heard of this gentleman called number 23, Michael Jordan? What is he best known for? Republicans buy shoes, buy my shoes.
Republicans buy shoes too.
No shit.
Okay.
He's trying to make a move for it because he's trying hard to change the narrative.
And remember, this Davis has an uncle who played there years ago, and when he came into the regime of Carolina basketball, you could still count the number of black players who played in that powder blue and white in basketball on your fingers and probably one foot.
I heard that.
He came in behind Phil Ford, which means he was somewhere like 10, 12, maybe as many as 15 in. So, and all this great stuff that Dean Smith's always done, remember, Dean Smith at a state institution did not graduate his first player prior to 1970.
Yep.
And then when Gil McGregor and Charlie Davis over at Wake Forest, a two private redneck school at that time especially. And remember, Carolina has, this is their first black head coach and all the Negroes, all those smart Dean Smith and whoever else coached basketball aficionados, all of them out there, and not all of them played pro ball. But guess what? They didn't get hired by Carolina either.
Yeah, Brad Darby. Boy, what a job he did.
All I'm saying here is that situation created a PR nightmare. Now they know they're going to have to get somebody to run interference for him with the media.
You don't know how to shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this was the ultimate dog whistle.
Yeah.
This is the ultimate dog whistle.
Think about
that. Backhouse would have been better.
This young man was not only brought in. This man was brought in several years ago with the express purpose of making him one of the coaches to groom him as a coach.
Right.
You know. So
look at the team.
And he has been groomed to be, whether you like it or not. He was groomed for this job. You know, he came there in what? He's been there like 10 years, 8, 9 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was brought in. He was one of the ones that was brought in because some of them didn't want to coach. Some of them know they can't coach, and so you know he fits the mold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even because he fits the mold.
2 or 3 years, his ass is gone if he hasn't been in that championship.
And then when they
go, 2 or 3 years.
See, the good thing for him so far is that certain things have been laid in place because, you know, when Roy Williams came back, remember Roy had laid down the law for before he came back because the first time they asked him to come back right after Smith left, he said no. And one of the reasons was it was taking over Dean Smith's program. They threw Matt Doherty under the bus, literally.
On the stage.
Because he took over Dean Smith. One, he took over Dean Smith's program, and then two, they didn't let him forget. One, you were the first choice. Two, if we could have found somebody else, your ass would be doing whatever it was you was doing. And, they're not doing like these HBCU football coaches, football programs are doing, bringing these guys in off the street. Because as we have seen in the last few weeks, it's more than a notion to put quality on the field. And remember, it's about building a program, even about playing football games. It's about building a program. Now, what remains to be seen is, can this young man build a, quote, quality program at that school when both Dean Smith still there?
I get the feeling he's going to get the Kevin Ollie treatment in the sense of let's just say they make a run to the Final Four next year. Oh, well, he won with Roy Williams' kids.
The other question to ask, guys, he won with several of them leaving.
Well, right. but the perception is going to be, because see, look,
no matter how many
white wives he may try to pull up out there on display. Yeah. At the end of the day, if he don't win, you know, he could be married to Raquel Welch, Joey Heatherton, or whatever. He ain't gonna give a damn.
That's right, Tony. This is a 60 game audition for this coach. He's got two seasons, and if he makes the postseason in both seasons, then they'll probably be able to weather the storm. We got Eric Satterwhite in the mix with us as well. If North Carolina is 9-6 in its first 15 games, will he still thank his white wife, or will the blame go somewhere else?
My question is, that FBI investigation with those assistant coaches, how much of that damaged a lot of these programs? Because isn't it interesting how quiet it is, how they done kind of brush underneath the rug? Because when
FBI... Well, very, very quietly, Sean Miller was sent the hell home, and he was in right in the middle of all of that. And if I remember correctly, remember how it was dealt with. All the black assistants for those schools, got either canned offered a buyout or whatever. You know, they didn't make that much money anyway. But that's my point.
That's just my point.
They went after this way. It's like the drug thing. They never go after the kingpin. They go after the kids on the street.
That's right.
Now the thing with Mr. Get Out has to understand is that it doesn't matter.
Are we talking about James Brown or Boudini?
I'm talking about a certain, put it this way. If you should hear the Pizz way, if I'm a Duke fan, just for shits and giggles, his first game in Cameron, I'm gonna have a thing of coffee in the background, tingling in the background. That's all I'm gonna say. That's all I'll say. If that's
the I'd have a white blow up doll passing around the crowd.
or whatever. But see, again, end of the day, they're not. You know, someone needs to tell him. When you get fired, it's not going to be because you had a white wife, bruh. It's because you ain't a good coach or whatever.
You couldn't fucking coach. That's right.
Yes.
This is
easy
for you.
This
is not a mid-major we're talking about. We're talking about a top-five school.
The revenue earner, the highest quality.
Exactly.
Yes.
And they're saying, okay, Jeeves, you can have the car now. And maybe Jeeves didn't apply for a license yet. Eric, help us make some sense of this, because the bigger issue seems to be the illusion of what North Carolina is perceived to be, as it now seems to be, based on this bonehead press conference and the cleanup job they'll have to do behind him.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I thought we were talking about Eddie George, but good to
you
know.
Won't come back to that.
I'm just joking. But yeah, Uncle Hubie, right? So it's okay to have a wife, but you know, did you really have to identify the ethnicity? I mean, couldn't it just been your beautiful wife, right? I mean, I think that could have been a better term.
Yeah.
But Hubert Davis, if you look at collegiate basketball as cathedrals or some kind of mega church, it's literally predicated on who's at the helm as a head coach, right? Indiana University was always associated with Bob Knight. You know, it hasn't been the same since, right? You know, if you look at UCLA, a good brother there named Walt Hazard or Abdul Rahman Agli, as he was known to those who knew him personally, or the Matthew, right? When he was a great player for Wooden, right? He coached Reggie Miller, Pooh Richardson, some other brothers. I don't think they've had a brother since him. And he was a graduate that played with Wooden's first national championship team, right? And so, you know, these universities like that, Georgetown, because of what John Thompson did, they can never break the chain of his coaching. So Patrick's always safe as many zillions as he's brought into Georgetown, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the cathedral known as Tar Heel basketball, no one really wanted that gig. You know, because it doesn't have that what it used to be, quote unquote, because this is the first chain, I believe, being broken from the Dean Smith chain. You know, Hubert basically being one of the people who worshipped at the church as one of the minions who was an ex-player who happened to sit the bench. You know, they also don't have to break him off that kind of money, but it looks like we're keeping the continuity, even though he's allegedly the first one in Black Hue, you know, who happens to be on that sideline, who happens to only also mention my beautiful wife. So with all that being said, I can't resist, man. I mean, I know it's legal to say, and I don't participate, but I almost started going to the distillery after that one. But
Eric, it's like that Sesame Street song. One of these things is not good.
And to your point, if you look at, say, like Gonzaga right there, I mean, you have a really small budget, but that guy, Mark Few, can actually really coach the game of basketball. He can actually legitimately coach. And so he gets players to go there. So right now in this college background, you don't have that same, you know, we're going to go to the church of Carolina, the church of Kentucky. Young people will go and end up anywhere. You start to see a little matriculation at HBCUs, things of that sort. So making this plug-in factor is really trying to just basically, you know, put pig on, you know, lipstick on the pig, unfortunately. And this person here has already started off in just fail mode, you know, with his comment of what he did. But listen, these boys know who to hire amongst the flock because they've been watching the niggers for a long time. So there's no answer, you know what I'm saying? In terms of, I mean, it's like, you know, and then the people in the Carolina food chain will always say, yeah, it's one of our own. You know, this is in part of our whole program. He's been on the bench for 9 years and all those virtual justifications. And unfortunately for, you know, Uncle Hubie, it got off to a bad start with his press conference. It's not getting any better. In terms of players who are now going to go to that university, the way these young people talk, say, dude, you don't go to that, dude. You heard it when he was talking about the press conference. You don't go ball for that MF again? And he's down with
there
the
you
Beckys? Because, you know, they don't use
that's
white
right.
They use Beckys. You know, you down with the Beckys? You know what I'm saying? That's how you roll it out on your own. And so not a good thing for Carolina basketball.
Well, also look at the fact that we have the added factor of coaches who were on the rise, so to speak, when it was exposed that they had white wives, and I'm thinking Coach Strong, and I forgot when he went to Texas, but obviously the move at Texas did not work. The Boosters have problems with him having a white wife. Now, again, his wife is his business, but when somebody gets blown up like that, Coach Strong was one of the first ones that ESPN threw the mouse, that they blew him up.
Yeah, he was fired like three times before officially being fired by media accounts.
Exactly.
And here's the flip to that coin real quickly, Mike. Eric Musselman's married to a sister, and he's down there in Arkansas. And so in that situation, that's been a challenge, you know, because of how that, you know, environment is, you know what I mean? And so despite, you know, what you can do on the sideline, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, with this Tar Heel process, it just goes to show how much that program and a lot of these, you know, super mega churches, aka basketball programs, have just literally slipped.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the freaking
and just to piggyback on what Eric said, you know, they didn't treat Willie Taggart too nicely.
No, they didn't.
At Oregon as well. When he came out to Oregon, what, he lasted a year, right?
Well, he left there on good terms, though, because he basically kept the train going, because after Pillsbury Doughboy by the name of Mr. Kelly left, the program sort of went mediocre, but then it got up again, because remember, they actually, that first year, they were in the running to get to the Rose Bowl, but then they lost some games. But I remember when he took the Florida State down, I said, no, stay in Oregon. They respect you. They respect you enough to whatever. But, you know, he was fired at least 18 times by midseason.
You're right. Tony, Coach Taggart suffered the same fate as many athletes do. If you're not super nigger, you'll be either average, mediocre, whatever, and they won't want to do it. I won't want anything to do with you. He was supposed to be super coach when he came in the door. He knows his people. He's supposed to be a Negro whisperer, and it didn't work out like that. And that cut his own throat. And this is the perception they have, even when the guys aren't playing anymore. If they happen to hold a clipboard and they run an offense or they're coaching, the microscope's even larger, because that organization is now saying, are we going to trust this Negro with all this money? And their logic is no different than star players in team sports who make money because they're super Negro, and then people get mad because they're not doing enough Superman work.
And Mike, you know what? As we were talking, I forgot about the most blatant one of all in regards to this.
Hmm.
Touchdown Jesus.
Oh yes,
with Ty Willingham. You know,
mm-hmm.
And now they have the guy that they want now, Brian Kelly. Hell, they were even willing to sleep with the enemy, otherwise known as Charlie Weiss, and what was the other cat that came right afterwards that was a longtime assistant, Bob Davey.
Yes.
And Bob Davey was losing on a quicker level than Willingham, but he was one of the guys. And
that's right.
You know, and And I know,
yeah,
you know what, Mike?
Yeah, Willingham, that was not going to work out long term, you know, because
exactly.
of that tradition. It's in
yeah.
certain universities like Texas, you know, we knew what happened
oh, yeah.
when Jim Brown and Syracuse played them back in the
mm-hmm.
60s and, you know, and the racism things that took place there. And that whole tradition that they have there is just, you know, reeks of, you know, the Confederacy. And so, you know, if you're going to go down there and, you know, be a coach, you got to buy into all of that bullshit. And there's just no way that's going to happen. You know, when you look at the, back to the Pac-12, what happened with, you know, Taggart when he came out, you know, it didn't get off to a good start when this, you know, conditioning coach almost blew out 9 players with injuries, you know, over the top. You know, I mean, it's just out of control.
My God.
That, you know, preseason conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But what set it off for my man Shaw to still last at Stanford, Willingham was before him, as well as Denny Green. So they had at least a tradition, you know, of cats who have kind of broke the door open, you know, a little bit over there.
Yep.
So, you know, and Stanford, you know, quote unquote, is that elite institution academically, things of that nature. But, you know, it's in Palo Alto, right in the foothills of the tech center, you know, Silicon Valley. So it has this, you know, urbane, multicultural type environment, open-mindedness thing, right? So your brother can survive there. When you go to these staunch locations like, you know, where Charlie Ward couldn't even get drafted in the NFL, and then you're going to be head coach and a Heisman Trophy quarterback didn't even get drafted. You have to look at the historicals, you know. I mean, they still like to rave about how Charlie Scott was the first brother to play at UNC and all, how Dean brought him in and he was brother helpful and bullshit, you know, and... it's all bullshit. Then you get your new coach, and you know, I mean, dude, I mean, be proud of your lady, man. I got respect for that. I mean, I don't think a person here has any kind of disrespect to any person of any other ethnicity or who they choose to go to. But why has it got to be my wife? I mean, come on.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's a major faux pas. And it's the team, and when North Carolina sports is supposed to be about intelligence, it wasn't a very intelligent thing to say or do.
That's a good statement.
And if
that's
I remember right,
statement.
That guy Brian Kelly that you guys mentioned,
statement.
Brian Kelly,
Mike,
Brian Kelly was Cincinnati head coach, and he literally retired at halftime because he had gotten the better job that he wanted, and he told his kids, "All right, good luck, y'all kill
Mike,
by yourselves
Mike,
and
Mike,
shit."
Mike, he's basically like my man saying, "Hey, honey, I'm not coming home no more. See ya."
That's right. That's exactly right.
Hey, Mike.
Oh my God.
Let me dispel one little myth about that whole thing about how intelligent. You would equate.
I'm trying to be nice.
Intelligence and all those kind of good things in academic. Do you realize when they had that scandal at Carolina, one of the first things that came out was, "Oh, that's an education situation that has nothing to do with athletics." When they had the scandal.
Oh,
yeah.
Fred, real quickly, that was in the African American studies is where the
place.
Mm-hmm. And some poor black dude who probably still can't get a job was in charge of that.
Mm-hmm.
He had the fake courses, but the other side of that is this. Now we talk about how, you know, the whole thing about the academia and all that kind of stuff. I've always respected Bobby Knight among other things. But one thing, you know, if there was a question about
him sure
going to class, he would go. He would walk. He would tell you to sit in a certain seat. He would walk past the door and look in the room. And what's his name? Funderburk. You know what he called
Funderburk. Funderburk.
You know why? He walked past the door. Funderburk is like 6'8", 6'9".
Yeah.
Sitting where he's supposed to sit between about 3 or 4 white girls. And his black chick, who was sitting near him, and the reason what he wanted him like that, so, hey, if somebody walked past there, they can't miss you. So when he walked past the door and don't see nobody in any of those seats, what he's telling? Hey, I know you weren't there because I walked past the door and I didn't see you. And remember, you're still in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
You're black, you're still in Indiana.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
And see, I've known people who, quote, had classes with basketball players but couldn't mm-hmm. identify them.
Yep.
And the only way some of them identified them, they would show up once or twice, and, they, you know, and someone would hand them their papers. They would pass the papers in, and, you know, they got grades. They just got culture stuff from American Studies thing because even though you had African-American males, guess what they don't know nothing about?
African-Americans.
Yeah.
Well, it's the age-old statement. You go to the university, know nothing about the universe.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. And what's the line, Mike? We have to make a football team that the university is proud of, not the other way around.
How about that? There you go. And you know, having you saying that though leads us back to George. You know, how long was this desire to coach in him? And, of course, he was a great player. He did his work and all that. And if he wants to coach, the opportunity comes, God bless him. But it seemed like it was never brought out in the open that this was something he really, really wanted to do. And that's why his move and the move that Deion made and when the others come down the pike is, will the answer be the real desire to uplift the HBCUs and even though Tennessee State's an OVC.
Right, but Mike, there's one problem, and I know Professor's going to back me up. As long, and even T-Mac, as long as these HBCUs do not respect, like Dr. Harvey did, sports, and as long as alumni, unlike Winston-Salem, who, as the professor said, we're going to turn the seats red. And I've seen it firsthand on a multiple times when they come in and I say, oh, shit. I'm just saying is that when you got certain administration and certain presidents
uh-huh.
in HBCUs that are mad because their picture not on the page during homecoming. And when they do not upgrade the programs, and again, Obama really hurt HBCUs back in the day. Nobody wants to talk about those grants because you don't have these. You have some corporations, but you compare them to some of them white schools. Their endowment is off the roof. Look, here in Virginia, Hampton was told they couldn't join University of Richmond and Delaware State and them boys because their budget was $30 million. They said, that's too small, son. Y'all can't even go with them. So I'm just saying, in my opinion, HBCUs, when they want to get their act together, even Moss Brown is trying to get back on the map, which I can't wait to see that. But I'm just saying, my humble opinion, when they get their act together and start to use sports, just like Virginia Tech did when Michael Vick was helping run with 13% and others, just like some old little small school that was in the final, a national championship game, Gonzaga, how they moved up, even Delaware
you're
State.
Let's be honest. I mean, while Tennessee State is an HBCU and they, you know, they can't hide or whatever, but the fact that they're in a white conference, they won't they won't catch it. Maybe their guys actually will push sports a little bit more because let's face it.
I can't wait to see that.
I look at them as the way you look at Hampton now and A&T. They are, you know, they're going to me, they've made the statement by saying, hey, by leaving the conference, we are putting a little bit more of an importance on sports than some of the other, which is probably one of the reasons why Hampton left. Because Harvey, you know, let's face it, good, bad, or indifferent, Harvey gets it. Harvey gets it all these years.
Been getting it for years.
The OVC is in a different revenue stream
Absolutely.
Than the SWAC per se, you know,
Absolutely.
And so from that standpoint, they are historically in HBCU, undoubtedly, right? That's
Absolutely.
Their legacy.
Yeah.
Nothing can change
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah.
But in the present, you are correct. They are Ohio
contract.
Valley Conference.
Yeah,
it's a different revenue stream.
What TV contract do the HBCUs have playing games at 9 o'clock at night and the damn game come on 1 or 2? And don't get me started about the championship basketball game at 2 a.m. Give me a freaking break.
Wait, Ray. I get to see one.
Oh, really? And that wasn't paved delay?
I get to see one HBCU game a year.
Damn, 2 a.m.
Yes,
wow.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, they weren't playing on a cruise ship out in Korea or something, on some type of different diet.
How about that? But, you know, this whole point that Reggie brought up brings me back to what Tony said. Who asked who? You know, did they come to Eddie George?
Question.
We got D'Orlando Ledbetter in the mix as well. Did they come to Eddie George and ask him, would he do this, or did Eddie pursue this?
Yeah, they did. He turned it down first.
Right. It's a combination of both, Michael. You're 100% correct, because in viewing the press conference, it almost was like, you know, it was no interest. It was more or less, you know, hey, I'm cool on the golf course, you know, on the golf courses. I have my businesses. You know, I'm teaching a class at Ohio State University on sports business. And, you know, I got my little, you know, cameo appearances on the NFL Network. I was cool. You know, but then I thought about it, and they asked me, and I asked my wife, and she said, you know, maybe I should do this. So it wasn't a 100% full heart. He said what really convinced him in his press conference, and, you know, obviously one can look it up. He said he talked to Jeff Fisher, you know, who drafted him, you know, and he said that Fisher, you know, was the guy that could motivate. He said when he finished talking to Fisher, you know, he felt like he could run through a wall, so Fisher got him amped. So, you know, it may not be out of the question to see Fisher showing up on his staff. You know, it may not be
Mike Tomlin.
Ordinary.
He did talk to Mike Tomlin.
He did sign him already?
Yeah, he did talk to Mike Tomlin.
Oh, wow, okay, cool. See, I didn't know that, but everything alluded like Fisher was going to be all in on joining.
Fisher is in as a consultant,
he wouldn't take a staff job. You're right. That's
He already made his best choice, because anybody that gives Groucho a headset again is out of his fucking mind. But
Jeff Fisher's
the
de facto head coach.
Well, see, one of the things you guys said with Fisher going to Tennessee State is they're most likely going to have a black quarterback, and we already know he doesn't know how to deal with them.
Hello.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you. So
he got Fisher on the staff. He's going to lose the season already.
Let's not miss what Fred said. Fred said if TSU gets a black quarterback, the one person they don't or shouldn't have around him is Fisher. Fisher's already destroyed two black quarterbacks that I know straight up. God only knows what he'd do for one that he has total control over indirectly through the head coach. We're talking poison here. D, can you hear us? Because we're talking about Eddie George's new post, and we're also talking about the faux pas that Coach Davis made with coming to North Kakalaki. So if you can throw something in the pot, let everybody know you're here.
Listen, long time, gentlemen. I've been joining you for a few minutes tonight, hang out with you. I'm happy for Eddie. You know, he grew up across the driveway from me. So, as you guys say, he got that bum on his team, whether he's the de facto head coach or the head coach, and Eddie's the figurehead. I can't stand Jeff Fisher. So Reggie put it well, and I think the professor chimed in and dropped his dollar on that pot. So I might as well chip in and open my wallet and just tied it up, because I can't stand that damn Jeff Fisher. I can't stand him.
Atlanta, how you really feel, family? How you really feel?
You know, I don't bite my tongue, Reg, so. I don't have a say for Hubert Davis. I thought Carolina would have made a play to try to get Jay Wright from Villanova. I thought that would have been their play to throw the money and try to bring Jay out of Philly.
It would have made
down to Carolina. Professor, I don't mean it's wrong.
Too much Vatican money tied up in Jay.
That's true. Am I wrong, Professor, that they had to have a Carolina guy? That's why. I thought
that's
Jay was fine for being
win.
Poked out.
Win.
One of
Okay, one, they wanted
the Carolina that was
guy,
the final but alibi.
Remember, but remember, they have been grooming this young man for the last, well, he's been there like 9 years.
Nine.
Okay. And what does the team look like?
And, you know, he stepped off the cliff already, in my humble opinion, with some folks.
Ooh.
Because, you know, remember now, he's bragging about having a white wife on a school that has the fewest, the state school with the fewest black players, or should I say the most white players, you know, at any level, unless you go to like St. Andrews. Well, the state institution, they got the most, they always have the most white guys. And we sit up and talk about how they don't have, I mean, these are not scholarship players. We got them on the bench. How they there?
Yeah. Are they about to be the Vanilla Hills?
Not the Tar Heels, Vanilla Hills,
you know, the Blanco Hills, the White Hills, the Tar Heels. I mean, is this still going to keep them there?
Eric,
ice, baby. That's all I can tell you.
Hey, all that
ignite when you need them.
They got a great Black History program.
They had a big white kid who went to the transfer.
Where the white women at?
And they tried to. He told me, I'm not a decision. I'm gone.
Curly at Hubie's house, I guess.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about Mr. Davis. Where the white women at?
Oh, my goodness.
That's right. Uh-huh. But you know, if they go 8-7 in their first 15 games this season, it will be just like Soldier's story when they talk about Coach Davis. We despise him and his white wife for doing what the fuck they did.
At this point, they would even rather have New England boiled coconuts coaching that team.
Oh no, not the boiled coconut! Oh God, yes. See. We've got moves here, but we've got disjointed moves because, in theory, they should be upwardly mobile moves, and we should be genuinely happy for them. But when we hear the mistakes come out and it becomes a syllogistic situation as if he succeeds, then it won't be because he's considered smart. It may be because of superior drafting or whoever they managed to get as recruits for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing here.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I see the Kevin Ollie effect all over again. I really mm-hmm. now I am not saying that Carolina is going to win a national championship next year.
Is Kimber coming back to play?
Yeah, I know. I don't even think they can get Del Curry Jr. at this point in time right now. But if they put it this way. If they say win the ACC or win the tournament or you know, whatever, to me they're going to say, oh, he won with Roy's kids. Now, yes, I know a lot of his kids are leaving, but again, knowing how they think and knowing the perception that's already been made, they're mm-hmm. going to, you know, he's not going to get credit. He's not, you know, he's going to, he's going to, he's, if this way. If they go like say 20-6, oh he you know he won with Roy's kids. If he goes
right.
say 11-13, well we're willing to
it's
give him
fault.
One more year maybe.
That's his fault.
I mean, when you're also looking at the Cathedral of North Carolina, you know, the great temple of North Carolina basketball in its hierarchy and the way it's looked upon as you know a basketball collegiate megachurch per se.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that you always run into, and we talked a little bit about this when Sanders took the Jackson State job. No one's going to feel sorry running up on the score for the Tar Heels who have been running over
exactly.
forever. No,
mm-hmm.
and anyone who's coached or competed at any level or definitely attempted coaching knows what type of challenge it is. Just literally to define your system. How are we going to play? Recruit your mm-hmm. players and motivate them. Can you gain their respect? Let alone what
yes.
the competition wants to do for you as well. You know they're going to mm-hmm. be merciless. You know, no, I mean, there's just no way if Clemson has you on the rocks or if NC State or some of these schools, Georgia Tech, you know, they want to put it to you because they're playing the Temple. They're not playing Hubert. They're playing the legacy. They're playing the history. They're playing all those things.
Right.
And they want to put the screws to you. That in itself is huge pressure. And based on the press conference we've seen, do you have the METTLE, the metal, to stand up to that? Do you have the cojones to be that dude? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And can you, you know, put that together? So,
that makes sense.
Again, it's going to be a huge trial and error. I mean, we don't want to see the brother fail in any circumstances.
Yeah.
I mean, forecasting failure, of course not. That's never been
the
mentality here. But the same token of time, I like what Mike said earlier. It said if you are in a university environment, which is allegedly, and then, you know, Fred weighed in on it, but allegedly a higher bastion of education, and you start off with that kind of quote, that is a poor reference for anyone. And aren't you a Tar Heel educated? So everything keeps going back to the whole historicals as the flaws that they are. You know, one thing I can give George credit for, when he did have his press conference, it was hard not to be impressed because he was very polished. Hard not to be impressed with that. And, yes, he has no coaching history. Yes, he kind of mentioned that. And, yes, he doesn't have the acumen. But, you know, he was also to be able to talk about, well, you know, I've been in leadership. You know, I've been a professor. So he was able to really enunciate and show some caliber. You know what I mean? Show some refinement. You know, show some dignified disposition. I was that was – as a TSU, you know, person through and through, you know, that was really good to see that representation. And he would not flub and go, you know, my R&B wife, because, you know, his wife was, you know, singing SWV. He didn't go, well, me and my beautiful R&B wife.
but, you know, Eric is right. Because Tony, George was a 180-degree reflection of what Deion was trying to give off. Deion was trying to throw flavor and all this other shit at folks and stuff like that. And George was like, yo, this is what I've done. This is a bit of my resume. I've been here, I've been there, I've done this, I've done that. And what I think I have is my assets will help reflect what TSU will be.
Yes.
And that works because that's what anybody who's looking for a job.
And 25 years in the community, right? 25 years in the local community there in Nashville. You know, they invested in the community.
And I also,
he did his homework.
Exactly. And you know, bringing in a Hugh Jackson is I think, is a very good move. Somebody
they're turning
who has
it up
coached
at CSU. They're turning it up.
The thing is, he will be as strong as his weakest link. Now, if he winds up being the quote-unquote weakest link, but he's surrounded by other folks,
he can definitely see Jackson. Yeah,
exactly.
Jackson will definitely tell him shit from Shinola. No question.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
An excellent move.
Yeah, it's
excellent
move.
Excellent move.
Look,
I mean, Hugh can coach it up. You know, Hugh struggles in that hot seat thing, but coordinatorship support mechanism. He was outstanding at SC.
Exactly.
And you know, he'll do really well there, and he can communicate.
Yes.
And he can communicate to the young brothers, which is important.
Yes.
To me, this looks. On the surface,
I like the Hugh Howard.
Wait, on the surface, it looks more Juwan Howard than it does Deion Sanders. On the surface, because
you talking about Juwan?
To me, it looks more like a Juwan
had a lot of years in with the Heat. In fairness,
that's true. But see, here's the thing.
That was Phil Martelli's team. You know that, though, right?
Yeah, he brought in Martelli.
But still. That being said, at the end of the day, he's got to be able to recruit. Because look, in college, that's basically 50% of your stuff. Yeah, you got to, you
right.
Logo bowl, still
you
alumni,
gotta,
your bounce.
Gotta,
one, but you
he
got
has
to
have
recruit.
Coaching. He has to have a coaching mentality at least that will allow him to let his offense coordinator run things on offense and let his defensive coordinator run things on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, there is a tradition that goes that way, because Joe and Cat had a team until what, Thursday, and Coach Merrick oversaw what they did, but he let them do their thing based on what he wanted them to do.
Exactly.
And see, so if that can work. But see, the other thing is, in this situation, I think with Eddie George coming in, hopefully, if he did not know this beforehand, hopefully Deion told him, you can't make it about you. Because when it's about you, things get skewed, and it's going to get real messy real fast.
Yeah, that's not his style. Yeah, that's not – that was kind of clear to me. That was not his style. But one thing I can say, you know, I mean, Fisher, you know, on the field, sideline coach, man, we all got some Jeff Fisher stories that won't be proactive. But one thing Fisher will definitely be able to – assist with is the fact that, you know, when they made the transition from St. Louis to L.A., right, you know, in terms of, you know, how do you put something together in a short period of time with no practice field, you know, they had to find a place to set up, you know, they were not really getting to a stadium, things of that sort. So having that overview from two NFL head coaches who coached at, you know, different franchises
Here's my question. You just said NFL franchise. We're talking college.
I'm well aware of the collegiate level. But what we all know, anyone who's been around sports, right, is that if you coach a third grade elementary girls basketball team, at some point in time, you're going to have a layup line, correct? You know, you're going to get two lines and you're going to lay up line. Third grade elementary. If you go to the to the Olympics, hold on real quickly. If you go into the Los Angeles Lakers practice, defending world champs, they're going to have a layup line. So there's continuous formats that you can outline. Not saying that the different league levels don't have capacity differences. Oh, absolutely. But when you talk about, coaching component, organizing, practicing, putting together the systems, and breaking down your units, that information is helpful.
And that's universal, whether it's college, pro, pee-wee,
I'm speaking to the thread, correct.
Now, look, we know what kind of coach he is.
Correct.
All coaches, bad, good, bad, and Stan Van Gundy, they still have to have organization.
Absolutely.
Well,
that's all I'm speaking to, correct.
If it pleases the court, I contend that there is already a layup line there for that son of a bitch. Why do I say this? Because during his time in Tennessee, he knew the beat writers at the Tennessean, all the local papers,
the TV affiliates,
he was singularly responsible for getting Vince Young kicked out the league in spite of the fact that Vince won 60% of his fucking football games. And that should not go by Eddie George. I know he was his man because Eddie was toting that rock for him, and he wouldn't let, as the professor would say, Steve McNair become Air McNair. But he is a stone-cold redneck. He's a Bubba, just like Goodell and a couple of others. He may have a longer pickup truck than some of them sons of bitches, but you better believe he's got a media pipeline that runs all the way through that entire Tennessee Valley area, and I can't stand that son of a bitch. He should fall through his own asshole and break his motherfucking neck, but I digress.
That's true.
This way. The one thing, you know, I sort of alluded to this earlier as well. You know, Eddie has a military background. You know, he played, I think it was, what was it, Fort Union before he went to, Fort Union Academy before he went to Ohio State.
That's right.
And I think just if nothing else, the regimental thing or what have you, that will be a huge, thing because it's all about, you know, organization and being able to delegate things and what have you. Because that's to see, I think it's actually going to be, real fire for the TSU. To be honest with you, I think the possibilities there are endless, more so than with some of the other hires. Because see, again, that's why I'm looking more at him being a Juwan Howard in the sense of there was the same questions when Juwan came in, even though he had
even though he had, you know, coach, you know, he had dabbled as coach and what have you. Because, you know, let's be fair. And given the climate that we've been in over the last few days, and I'm not and hear me, I'm not going to, you know, get into specifics or whatever, but the marginalization of the black man, whether it's as a coach, whether it's as a CEO, whether it's as an athlete, whether it's just as a, you know, there's always going to be scrutiny, unwanted scrutiny, overhyped scrutiny. Now,
true.
Again, you know, Mr. Get Out in Tar Heel Land did not help himself as much as he thinks he did by, you know, mm-hmm. You know, basically doing the, you know, by basically putting his, you know, white wife on this unrealistic pedestal. Because, you know, again, end of the day, they ain't gonna fire you because you're a white wife. They're gonna hire you because you because, you know, you could be the coach. Or they just
he has to recruit sons of black mothers.
Exactly.
In any case.
And he doesn't know, and he doesn't, and the sad thing is, I don't even think he realizes the damage that he has done with that statement. Because
we're here to remind him.
Exactly. Because you know, there's somebody saying, like I said, I didn't like Carolina before, but damn sure ain't gonna have him go to Carolina now.
Hey,
I mean, so in other words, this is a page out of He Got Game, huh? He's letting him know, hey man, we come down here for recruit weekend. We're gonna Jesus Shuttleworth special, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hello, that's right. I just hope Eric, that he does not give this guy too much rope or he'll hang himself with it. Remember when Fisher got the Los Angeles and the Rams, Dickerson went out of his way to constantly put heat on his no coaching ass. And he made sure that he couldn't get away with just sloughing folks off. And I will always see a spark of gratitude coming at Eric when Fisher finally left, because he was grossly mediocre at his very, very best. He could have won a Super Bowl if he had unleashed the talent that the organization had drafted and had endorsed. So we know this is a bitter old redneck motherfucker. The only thing's different is that he didn't have no overalls, he didn't have a hole in him and whatnot, and his hound dog had left him and whatnot. So as far as I'm concerned, Eddie George must be careful if he's to be successful.
True. I mean, you know what? As long as he doesn't give him a headset, I think he'll be good. You know,
and Eddie at the press conference was like, yo, listen, Fisher drafted me. He brought him, or as he calls him, Jeff, brought him here, drafted him. And, you know, he was pumping it up. So I knew he already knew that he was going to bring him on staff. He just didn't officially do it. He said he's going to interview some of the remaining coaches and see how we can fill out the remaining staff. But it was quite clear that Fisher was all in. It's this new... Again, we've talked about this, man, which is, you know, this new flavor of the month HBCU club that everyone and their damn grandmama, wherever they may be on the planet, wants to deal with this alleged, you know, new hors d'oeuvre, right, or this new entree to dabble in and associate with, because, you know, pounding the guy in a place like here all the time to talk about the great legacies of what's taking place. And, you know, now these people here with this new consciousness are circling back, because, you know, hitting the golf course isn't the same as reaching back in your community, which was just a natural thing that we grew up with in our era growing up. It was automatic. You did something community-wise or reached back. Yeah. Even while you were active, you know, if you were a collegiate athlete at any level, you played any brother here or just went to school from your community and you came back, I guarantee you there's people here who did some type of reach back, you know, where they were able to influence or someone knew in your family what you were doing, and you dedicated some time to be proactive and share some words of wisdom to put someone forward, right? I mean, I feel that's a common thread, right?
The best choice, though. My thing is, you got an established school and a powerhouse conference, not an HBCU. I don't think Eddie George was the best choice. I mean, you got a lot of people.
There are better choices. I feel the same thing with Dion. You know what I mean? In terms of getting a raw coach, you know, someone who has the background and pays the dues. Again, the celebrity coach thing that these universities are leaning to have that identity thing. I mean, even the AD was kind of mentioning that he had good candidates, but he just felt this was his choice. So if you look at it, where he's a brother who got this opportunity, and I applaud it, because we've seen it far too many times in NBA where Steve Nash never coached, but he's running Brooklyn Nets.
Let's be honest. If they had hired a similar type white guy, we'd all be saying, "Well, where's the brothers?" Well, now they hired a brother, and now there's some people like you can't, you know.
I know what you're saying, Reg.
But
they hired Peyton Manning, correct? In other words, Tennessee State hired Peyton Manning to be their next head coach. No coaching experience, but it's Peyton Manning. Same kind of a shit. Eddie George, I mean, can a brother nowadays, based on qualifications, acumen, and maybe not have had a clipboard under his chin, get a head coaching job and build a staff around him based on other accomplishments? Why the hell not? It's been going on in this society forever.
I think Hubert Davis is a bad hire. He has no head coach experience. Stackhouse has some, even though he's made losing, and he can relate to the younger players. So we just agree and disagree. Like I said, Tennessee State, that was not a good hire. That was a bad hire.
You know what? We can't say it's a bad hire yet.
Well, we'll see.
I don't think we can say it's a bad hire yet.
Well, let me ask you this. Reggie, what was the Deion Sanders hire to you there?
Hey, I wasn't on board with Deion Sanders, but again, in aftermath, it brought a lot of notoriety, it brought a lot of money, it brought a lot of electricity to HBCUs. Okay, that's fine. But this is spring ball when nobody else is playing. Let's see what happens when the fall time comes and you see how much exposure they get. That's all I'm saying.
How's that different than Eddie George? Something else we need to look at here because, I mean, this whole thing about guys coming from the pros with experience, without experience, realistically, it don't matter. A few weeks ago, I was looking through, when I was working on finalizing the book I did on HBCU football, one of the things that I noticed was that there's a lot of people in there that I recognize. You know, he played at a white school, went on to the pros, and he won what? 20% of his games. He won 25% of his games. You sort of look down the list, okay, yeah, he got fired, he quit. You know, because realistically, the only one that I can think of offhand that really did really well was Ryan Oldham. After him, the line of good coaches who had played from white schools, who went to a white school, played in the NFL, came to an HBCU, you know, that did kind of well. So he's only one.
Correct.
You know, and most of them don't even have winning. You know, no matter how long they stayed, most of them don't even have winning records. So, because my thing was, he is another one of them guys who went to who made all that money for them white schools. Went to the pros, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when they came looking for a job, they couldn't get hired by white school, so they came to break in
HBCUs.
At a white school and all those kind of things. And I said, you know, and because I was, when I said in one interview, I said, no, I'm sick of it because I've seen the pattern. And at the time I had the book with me, so I just rattled off two or three of them. And I said, wow. They don't seem to do all that well.
I mean, Ken Riley, when he went back to FAMU, he put in some time. He had some success there, right?
He was coach of the year one year. He was coach of the year.
Ken Riley and Doug are two. All right, got it.
Let's put it this way.
Monty Coleman did okay at Arkansas. Remember Monty Coleman from the Redskins?
Monty Coleman did good. He was there for a long time.
But now you're talking also something else here, especially when basketball is in the mix. We're talking paradigm shifts in style. You know, Calipari comes to Kentucky. People know he's a snake. Everybody and their mama know he's a snake.
Man, he's a first class.
He gets high-quality recruits, They go in there and they get one and done. Let's say Coach Davis comes in.
He said high quality liquor now. Don't forget he got his own Jack Daniels.
That's right.
Man.
That's right. Well, let's make the argument that, okay, now he's got a solid program. He wins 25 games this first year. He finds a couple of primo recruits, and North Kakalaki all of a sudden is in a one and done mode for some of these kids. And with the machine that we already know they have, they can pipeline guys to the pros, just like Kentucky is doing now with Calipari. So what does that mean for North Carolina basketball and all the other politics and nonsense within?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Because, see, the difference here also is that the paradigm is different now because, Carolina is not perceived the way it was when we were growing up, even just from 10 years ago.
It's been a huge slippage the last few years.
It's with all of them to a certain extent. You know, think of, you know, look at a Gonzaga. Look at a Loyola. You know, look at some of these other schools that have basically, you know, look, at this time right now, if you're a McDonald's All-American, a Wendy's All-American, if you're a McDonald's All-American or a Wendy's All-American or a Fat Burger All-American,
they go everywhere now.
You can go any, you'll be seen and you'll whatever.
Correct.
And that's the difference. Now, and I think slowly but surely you're starting to see that on the football level as well. Now, again, we're still dealing with COVID, so there's still some backlash. But for the most part, you look at Clemson. Think of where Clemson was 10, 15 years ago. Clemson, in a sense, I look at Clemson as the Gonzaga of college football in the sense
that's
of
a good point.
They made themselves into a made man.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were all
national champ level. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it went on probation too under Coach Floyd. Don't forget they went on probation the following year.
But afterwards, they basically were an afterthought. They were basically an afterthought after that championship in 81. And they've been a middle of the road team at best in the ACC most of the year.
All I say is follow the money. Somebody done put some money up in there for the good players.
I understand that, but the thing is, look at, you know, on on the surface, Clemson football from 2000, Clemson football in 2000. Is a hell of a lot different than Clemson football in 2021.
And what's the common denominator? All of a sudden, I still say that you got some stuff going on underneath the table. All of a sudden, this big money started rolling in.
Look at Florida State,
Miami, all of a sudden drop off the face. They get a couple infractions. Now all of a sudden, you got Carolina get a little infraction, and here come Clemson, the big bad wolf. Come on, something smells.
It doesn't work for everybody because Tennessee was having those recruits bringing them lunch, you know, brown paper lunch bags of cash when they showed up on campus, man, or McDonald's bags. I mean, that's how corrupt that was.
That's the good old volunteer.
The myth that collegiate sports is some Puritan level is utter bullshit. And so we can, like, sit around and just, you know, pickpocket everywhere at every level, at every college, at every university. I mean, there's side bets going on. You know, between schools, all things. Come on, man. Even in our heralded HBCUs environments as well. So you know, if we want to keep it 100 and start breaking out the microscope and the telescope and start digging.
That's right.
I mean, we're not going to find much purity at all.
Eric, I got a question. When women's basketball start getting better like it is, you tell me and golf. How much has fame doing in them affect the sporting world, especially college? Because I know you know. Come on.
No, the question was with women's basketball.
I'm talking about the way sporting is going to. I mean, they're betting on everything now. I mean, they start betting heavy on women's
basketball. Oh, the betting on, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
He done lost that freaking mask.
I mean, we've talked about that. I mean, before the so-called legalization in this environment, forever, ever, how the books are in the needles are getting moved every single modem, and that's the very difficult thing about sports, because you don't ever know from referee to player who's on the take.
And how many of them calls, especially
you just
do
not know. I mean, Donahue pointed that out with the NBA without beyond a shadow of a doubt. How about the woman traveling with the gambling scene there?
Oh,
well,
man.
Before that.
How many bad calls we see in the women's games or the men's games? And try to finger, sipping first finger.
It's at every level. It's at every level. When there's a buck to be made and you can bet who's going to make the most free throws before the 2-minute mark of the first half, every level. You know, I mean, hey, let's foul early, y'all. Let's get in foul trouble early. We got a safe bet. If they get 8 free throws, you know, before the 2-minute mark, let's put a K up, and we'll get our money. We already got our money to our fence. You don't think players get involved? I mean, that goes back to the days of Madison Square Garden in the 50s, right? CCNY and shit. Mm-hmm. This has been ongoing forever.
Mike, remember that? You know, everybody, you know, the story that they tried to bury in the NHL with that referee that was Mike. He was I got to call something on Nashville just because I can. Now, how many times, if you think that's the first time that a referee said something like that and just didn't get mic'd, that's all?
There you go.
Don't forget what was said to Cam Newton.
Cam Newton was in a game where he actually won. He threw the winning touchdown pass where he got beat down to the white meat like usual at that time. And when he got to the podium, he said, why didn't you call roughing the passer on that guy when you saw his elbow was all in my eyeballs and stuff? And basically the guy said, you ain't old enough to get that call yet. Now think about that.
That's called the Michael Vick rule.
The referee told him, you ain't here long enough to make that call.
But if you blow on Tom Brady, you get a 15-yard penalty. Don't get in his knees. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, when you say get down to the white, you see, that's serious. See, what you're talking about, again, these serious indicators that miss the first level of the review. And so Cam ain't been the same since the Denver Super Bowl.
No,
you know, Kaepernick,
that's exactly
the walk around with a zipper after he won the Super Bowl, the way
he
got beat up. My goodness gracious. Cap got so beat up the following year. It looked like the offensive line was on the take.
Well, you know what?
Now you have Deshaun Watson who went from 19 sacks his first year to 62 the second, and his brother's calling the universe to get a massage to try to ease his fucking pain.
He should be calling the police for non-support. Good Lord. We got Patrick Ferrer in the mix, too. But let me throw this at you because you guys opened up that Pandora's box with prop bets. That's what's going to be happening. Prop bets are going to be the panacea and the crack cocaine of sports because they are going to always be there. And if anybody's got an itch, it's going to get scratched if you find out that, paid 5-1 if the Carolina Hurricanes score a goal in the last 5 minutes or something like that. It's all going to be about prop bet. What ifs?
Mike, first of all, hopefully everybody's okay. Good to be with you.
Good evening, brother.
Mm-hmm. Let me give something in line with that. This week I got information, and I've been smelling it, but now the funk's in my face.
Pig feet and hot butter.
No lie. That you talk about prop bets. FanDuel and DraftKings, I told you last week, they're involved in expanding their business acumen and platforms.
Oh, dear
Lord. DraftKings is now in negotiation with a couple of media companies that they're going to buy into to assure media coverage for their particular entity. Let me give you an indication.
Holy shit.
ESPN announced tonight that they're going to have, it came on tonight, that they're going to have another special draft betting show prior to a game. They showed a highlight of it tonight for like 15 minutes. It's coming. Mm-hmm. Basically, what it boils down to this, these DraftKings and FanDuel's and William Hill are going to buy into media companies where they are assured of not just advertising or their name being flashed for cookies on a computer, but something that's going to be definitely labeled that has their attachment to boost their product during all kinds of sports.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I'm not surprised. You
that's a relationship.
You reminded me of when the last expansion happened. Because if you remember, Jacksonville was not supposed to come into the league. Everything was tailor-made for St. Louis to come in, you know, with bells on and stuff. And the owner at the time, J. Wayne Weaver, said, "This is bullshit. Y'all fractured this whole thing. You rigged it. And there's no way I can get in there as a franchise." Now, Vegas at that time had Jacksonville as a 22-1 shot to make it into the league as one of the expansion teams. Carolina, by contrast, was 9-5. Well, a consortium, well, as they would call it in horse racing, there was a syndicate put together, and they put together over $1 million on Jacksonville. And sure enough, Jacksonville was the other franchise. They went to the pay window at 22-1.
Wink.
That's the kind of prop bet.
Palms got grease.
Mike, I can add to that because there's a baseball version as well. When they had their last expansion, Colorado, New Jersey, and Florida were the three finalists, and everyone thought for sure that it was going to be Jersey and Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember, the Florida people were the people who were high in Florida. A guy by the name of Wayne Huizenga. Wayne Huizenga.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, also owned Blockbuster Video.
Blockbuster.
That's right.
Miami Dolphins.
I know that.
Two days before the final vote comes up, big announcement from MLB, Blockbuster Video is now the official video outlet of the state.
You ain't shitting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, you give me flashbacks, because I was the Nets when I was at that time. They were looking at where they were going to put the baseball team because the big team, because you got the Yankees and you got the Mets in New York, but Jersey, because they have the football team over there with the Jets and the Giants playing the same stadium, plus they had the minor league baseball team in Newark that was doing very well at the time. They couldn't play at Newark because it's too small. But you give me flashbacks. That's what happened.
Yeah, Jersey was ready, and see. They would have very easily played Wimpy, otherwise known as the Yankees and the Mets, some money on the to get into Major League Baseball. But
Tony, the problem was the Yankees were pushing that 25-mile distance from the stadium.
Stadium.
I can be 25 miles when you're in the next borough in New York. How can you do that?
Well, that's because the drywall contracts were awarded to the Soprano family.
You got that right. You ain't wrong.
Just another reason why you need to hate the motherfuckers from the
back. That's right. That's right. You know, I don't mean to harp on stuff like this. I really want everybody to understand.
Hey, Mike, can I get that in writing, Mike? Can I get you a swear? Can I get that in writing?
I really want everybody to understand the depth of what
I feel like
Vince
I'm watching
Young
the George Floyd murder all over again, man, with that guy.
Well, you know what? It was a murder because he murdered that brother's career. You know, when he was out there balling, he won games. Some of them may not have been pretty, but at the end, Tennessee had more W's than they had L's. 31 W's, 19 L's. And in spite of all of that, this brother, he was constantly harangued by this guy. And then, of course, when they saw what Kaepernick and others was doing, Fisher gets put on the competition committee with the express purpose to take out the brothers. And, of course,
White
RG3,
Kaepernick out.
RG3, Kaepernick.
The read option. It was that read option.
The read option, gone. Gone. That's right. That's exactly right. And here you have somebody who, if he wasn't a stronger brother, he'd have fallen apart by that. He tried to come back twice.
Yeah, Mike, I got a quick question. Is Russell Wilson the new face of the NFL? Now him and his wife, Sierra, are going to do a special Sunday, Roll Up Your Sleeves, sponsored by Walgreens. I'm like, okay, Russell, what's up here?
Just more COVID propaganda.
Yeah, we can say what we want, but Wilson has always been
a
team player. He's been a good soldier, and he's done what he's done. He protected himself, and he got his money. But make no bones about it. That brother is an alpha male. Whatever it is
that he's
got underneath all of this.
Yes, he is.
Why in the hell
he's
been alpha male and not throw that damn pass in the Super Bowl? He's such an alpha male.
Yeah,
His younger sister was part of Stanford's
national
championship.
Best running back in NFL, and he's going to pass the fucking ball.
Let me say this. If Wilson makes that decision as a 5-year vet, no way he runs that play. He kills the play. And the ball is given to Marshawn, or he takes it himself. Whatever. He ain't throwing the damn ball. He did that
for his
coach.
The damn ball.
He owed his coach offensive coordinator, Sunday. They both run
I'm
shit.
I'm sorry,
and
man. I'm still pissed about
ass.
It. I'm sorry. I should have dragged back for that game.
Reg, let me say, Reg. Let me help you out, Reg.
Help a brother out.
I know definitively from various sources that was not his call. He was told to run that play. He was told to run that play.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. It's closed in the
season.
Couldn't he kill that though?
And Bill Belichick on that other sideline had the perfect wiretap. There you go.
That's right.
There you go.
That's no way you play that well
without a wiretap.
Thank
my
you.
Goodness.
Can you hear me now, Mr. Carroll? Can you hear me now, Mr. Carroll? Can you hear me now?
Is that Belichick? Belichick in the tower. Intercepting the signal.
Hold on. I'm not going to get into conspiracies or anything like that. But Warren Moon won 5 consecutive Grey Cup titles in Canada. He won close games. He won routes. He was the general.
But,
he worked that field well now, and he came
Canadian
in with 5 consecutive
ever.
Rings. Nobody can say that. Not Brady.
Why is Doug Flutie the greatest Canadian player ever if Warren did 5 more than him?
Doug Flutie couldn't hold his job. Doug Flutie is not even, listen, there are 2 quarterbacks greater than Doug Flutie, Warren Moon and Damon Allen. I can tell you that because I've
Allen.
Got
Damon Allen, that's right.
Having said that, think about this. The NFL does not want a black quarterback to roll like that. Mahomes was quickly on his way, and they did everything to stop him. And even when he was under siege, if you watch back at that tape, he was running all over the place to get open. And he threw passes that were in the range of the receivers. And some of them were just flat drop, but this guy was on target, even under duress. When they take the sheets off his ass, if he stays healthy, Mahomes is going to toast every one of these motherfuckers. I mean,
he's still recovering from that Super Bowl beatdown. That was Well, when you lose 2 all-pro tackles, what happens? Just what happens? Yeah, he got beat.
That's right.
I was a jam.
Damn sure did.
As nice as he was, he still needs protection.
He was beat like a runaway slave.
Nobody can do it alone.
Speaking of protection, a very quick note. What happened last week? Out of the blue, and I caught wind of it. I talked to Tony about it. Last Saturday and Sunday, the NFL, in conjunction with the HBO, had a mini camp in Alabama.
Yeah.
And
University of Alabama?
No, University of Alabama at Birmingham.
Okay.
And what happened was it was put together by, I forgot the brother's name, but I know he worked as he worked with the Minnesota Timberwolves as the as an executive, and he formulated it along with his relative and some other HBCU people, and the NFL had a hand on it. Guys were able to they had like I think about 40 to 60 players there being worked out. It was I don't have the notes on it right now, but it was a last minute piece. But it did get some guys' attention. And matter of fact, one of the guys is a guy named David Moore for Grambling. He's in the top 15 of linemen that was charted out for this. I saw this week. So there's some hope to get a couple of players we could be sure to look at this draft. Cool.
Oh yeah.
Cool.
I'm just glad it's off because, you know, with COVID and all the other stuff, it's a mess.
Fellas, on that note, the NFL also did something. They made sure that all the executives and people associated with the various franchises are vaccinated. This is not just players now. They're talking about GMs, scouts, everybody in the front office who would have some sort of capacity. They must all be vaccinated. The players' deal has to be worked out through the union, I'm sure, but the long and short of it is they ain't going to mess up this gravy train. They managed to survive all of the pitfalls to make sure that their season went through. They got their $10 billion. They ain't going to try to mess up getting another 10. So they made sure everybody is going to get that shot.
I remember what Eric Goodell said 2 weeks ago. We expect full houses in September for the
NFL. Hell yeah.
Full houses.
That's right.
Not three quarters. Not 7
But
all
his cat.
Oh, yeah.
But Mike, the grits today now, was that the fact that the player says, we ain't going for volunteer workouts. We ain't going towards Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That's
going
to be an issue with some players, brother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't blame them. I do not blame them.
The players are always the wild card, so they have signed that, you know, incredible contract, you know,
there you go,
off of COVID year, that TV contract. Yep. So, yeah, he's got to make it mandatory. That's his insurances and his draconian laws of telling what his executives have to do with their bodies, you know, been impacted,
At the very worst,
but the players always have that final say.
It's a HIPAA regulation, too, because if they're in a work environment that's messed up, like what happened when they had the strep infections in Cleveland and Tampa in their locker room.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking compensation. That's a whole different story. It got nothing to do with being on the field, but it has to do everything with your work environment.
Yeah.
If you're going to go into a toxic work environment, that's grounds for legal action.
Leave it to the NFL to not come up with better health care systems for its players, but make it mandatory to have a COVID shot. You know, leave it up to that for that reason.
Yeah, that's a given. That's a given. Mike, I got a question for the HBCU grads, man. Big time. I've been looking at this all week long. Trying to get you guys your opinion on Eddie George being the Tennessee State coach, man.
I ain't happy about it, but Professor can help you. I think Miss Mother guys, that Carnell Maynard, some other
I kind of think so too.
Got his job. I'm not happy about it.
But the coach
personality. We talked about it.
I think the
coach
personality was responsible for this
already,
one.
We've already hashed that somewhat. My thinking is, one, hopefully this is not another Deion Sanders situation. It doesn't matter to me.
It's attached to it.
But the other thing is, who did they look at other than him, and who's going to be on his staff? Because
we already know he's got Hugh, and Fisher. You know that Fisher gets no love anywhere. He's also a chief consultant, Jeff Fisher.
Right.
That's a joke. One thing that always irks me is these guys that come from these white schools that made all the money for them, they want to come to black schools and get jobs. There are several of them.
You got lifers there that could get those jobs in the HBCU system, correct?
It's not even a black or white thing, because I was saying earlier, going down the list, you know, to make it short, Rod Broadway is probably one of the few who came from HBC, who came from white school, played in the NFL, although he had a cup of coffee and a couple of biscuits and he was out, but still he was starting college at Carolina. He came back. Mm-hmm. He won at Central. He won at Grambling. He won at NP.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what they're going to do, and he did it without the fanfare, he did it without the big name. He just did it.
He coached. He was a coach.
And he did it doing part of the time. He was actually doing it. His wife was suffering from a major disease. You know, so that was one reason he came back to North Carolina.
Fred, let me throw this in there, Fred. Two things. I agree with you. I'm an Eddie George fan. I know, but I think there's some coaches in HBCUs to give them that shot. But I got some information, and I saw information from how can I forget his name? Keyshawn Johnson. Keyshawn Johnson said something very important when they made that announcement on ESPN. He said, and it's true, how is Eddie George in the NFL with obviously a stellar career?
Mm-hmm.
He has to go to HBCU to get a head coaching job. Well, no job should be given to guys who are in HBCU trying to get themselves together or trying to move up the ladder, because the NFL isn't giving Eddie George no job so he can flourish. Like, we know that Dan Orlovsky and people like that getting jobs of TV or, more importantly, coaching to move up their career. I think that's even more an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to that, that was my whole call with Sanders, you know, when he got the job at Jackson mm-hmm. State. You know, I mean, he is not from Jackson, Mississippi. That doesn't fit his long-term lifestyle at all. I mean, mm-hmm. this is a jump-off
right.
for him. You know, I mean, Eddie was in Nashville for 25 years. A little bit of difference from that particular level in terms of being invested in the city, this, that, and the other. But, you know, the AD was gung-ho and, you know, doing this kind of hire for whatever reason. He's playing in the OVC, trying to develop a program. So whatever they got working backdoor behind the scenes, no telling, because there's definitely some backdoor activity at that level going on here, no question. But true, in terms of those coaches who have, you know, paid the dues, who are purely in it for the coaching, you know, who are going to hang their hat. And that's what Sanders, and that's what me and Fred was talking about, the professor, prior to mm-hmm. Sanders' job. Like Alabama, A&M, these schools are not going to lay down. They got a lot of pride. They're going to push back, you know, and they're mm-hmm. going to go at you, and they're going to talk about you like they have and verbalize it. Like, you know, they're not advertising every time there's a YouTube video. I got another five-star coming here. I got another five-star, you know, and all those different things like that. And then, you know, when you see that because you have a relationship with Pepsi Cola Company, and you figure that's going to be a job where you're going to bring Pepsi Colas to HBCU, a.k.a. from Deion Sanders. Okay, so you're a corporate proxy for Pepsi. These other, you know, and they're going to hire people from HBCUs one at a time. And anyone who's coached knows about that. Me, at a high-profile high school level, at Coca-Cola wanted to bring these machines on campus near the gym. And they said, hey, coach, you know, we'll sponsor you this. We'll give you a booth ticket, mm-hmm. this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. I had no price. I said, you mean you're going to bring all these carbonated beverages up here in high sugar? Already I'm trying to, you know, get them get around that type of diet. Mm-hmm. I said, do you have anything that's non-carbonated that you're going to put? Are you bringing water here? Are you bringing Gatorade? What are you going to be putting outside the campus? Before I even remotely, well, no, coach, you know, we want to bring soda up here. I shut it down. You know, I said, no, this can't happen. So this is what they do. So when I heard that contract situation with Pepsi, oh, Deion's bringing, they're going to hire people. That is a corporate proxy, again, for the largest spending portion of our country is the African-American community. And so, oh, is that what you really hear? Delivering this part and parcel as well? Wake the fuck up, folks.
You know, it's a Deion Sanders effect. And you know something, guys? I hate to tell you. There's more coming.
Well,
corporate proxy.
Look at the sideline during the game. How many times do you know, and how many teams do you know that have three cameras on that side, two of them on the coach, went on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really?
Oh, there's more coming. There's more coming.
Oh, sure they are. Because
doing his job, man. You know, I mean, this is
because,
no random hire.
HBCUs are going to become the show places for this whole new genre of coaches. But like I say, if you look at the record that he's put together this year, okay, Grambling lost because he fumbled it going into the end zone.
That's what they did.
Mississippi Valley had half their team in quarantine. About a third of their team was in quarantine. They shouldn't have played in Florida Memorial, or whoever that was they played from Florida.
NAIA school, like Division 22.
Hell, it could have been Sergeant Waters they played on that day.
I mean, you know, that's
hey, teammate, so that was not your flag football team you put together out there?
No. Eric, there would have been a lot of empty potato chip bags and half-eaten donuts. So it definitely wasn't my team.
I mean, I thought that was a flag football team you put together, teammate, in that first game. My bad.
Look at what has happened since. Okay, he got past Grambling, he got past Mississippi Valley. So those are two legitimate SWAC wins. I don't care how you look at them; they still SWAC wins. But
right.
then
mm-hmm.
look what happened when he ran into the cream of SWAC. He got SWAC yep. by Fam. He got by Bama State.
Getting
he
swag.
Got smacked mm-hmm. by A&M, mm-hmm. and he got SWAC by Southern. And
yes.
see, the coach from Southern is nice. I know him personally.
Mm-hmm.
The coach from Alabama A&M, he ain't nice. He
came with it.
Fred, I know you told Alabama A&M to tackle Dion. I know you did.
I sent my representative.
I mean, you know, back to press conferences we were talking about. You know, Uncle Hubie and his references, how he likes, you know, a shot of rippling white women. But on another set on that, we were talking about, you know, when Sanders, Coach Prime, I believe he also likes to be referred to. So Coach
mm-hmm.
Prime. After his first game, mentioned about his stolen merch before
yeah.
he wanted to talk about
yeah.
the game. That was woof.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Very
you
interesting choice in selection of verbiage.
Okay, we're talking about a coach who's supposed to be so repping the universe and stuff. How come so many of these things keep coming back to him? Because for me with HBCU campuses, you don't carry yourself and leave it on the back seat like that. No way. I mean, you just don't do that. You know,
yeah.
and it's nothing negative about HBCUs. You provide the opportunity for this situation to happen. You know,
in an all-black school, in an all-black environment, and all the stereotypes around stealing and black men. And the first thing you do before you talk about your first victory, my goods were stolen, not wise. There's so many things that happen behind the scenes.
Exactly.
When you coach, you got players jamming or rapping in the locker room, right? You can get some word about a parent, a player you're coaching has relatives that recently got locked up or something that got to get out there and play. There's deaths. You don't start the press conference off and go, well, you know, hey, the game today, we had words.
Dion,
you got to get
Dion
back
has
on
the
focus.
Same problem. Dion has the same problem that Michael Irvin had. Michael Irvin was from the Pensacola ghetto, and he acted like it. And with the experience that he got, he eventually cleaned up and he understood the big picture and whatnot. But Dion is no different. He may have a little more flash and may speak a little bit better, but it's the same horseshit. They think that super flash shit works, and it does not work. So Coach Prime is ready to get stomped on by Megatron, Soundwave, all the rest of the Decepticons before this season is over. But he's definitely going to have to clean up his act if that shit might work long term.
Mike, exactly. Speaking of what Eric said about proxy, keep in mind for this
if not this year, upcoming year. Keep this in mind. At the press conference, will you see a national, particularly somebody like Prime or Eddie George, that you just mentioned, if in the press conference the microphones have something relative to pushing a particular product that's never been done before at HBCU?
Correct.
Keep in mind. Watch for that to happen. Because if that happens, there's a lot attached to it that I'm not going to talk about right now. Keep that in mind. I can see that happening.
And Patrick, when you realize now that the glass ceiling has been completely lifted, when you look at the NBA and you see all the corporate logos on the jerseys, when you watch hockey and you see the corporate logos on the helmets, we're not going to be able to tell stock car racing from pro football because they're literally going to slap a logo out there and say, how did that get there?
Don't be surprised if it has something to do with DraftKings or FanView or some gambling company, or and not directly, in a covert way, so you can get involved with the game. Because
I can add to that. The WNBA is having their draft tomorrow, and they're going to have a separate draft app where you can
take the money.
Well, you can pick. You can call the picks and make a couple bucks. Now, look. It's bad enough that we got Hubert Davis's wife up there telling us to make it rain, but
Lord have mercy.
But now they're just being shameless with it now.
I know that they're going to do that. But as sure as I'm black and I'm sitting in this chair comfortably, if they ain't in the test of what they go for the 29th of the draft,
that's exactly why I said it, because the draft is literally two weeks from tomorrow.
I'm telling you, somebody gonna bet their mortgage on somebody being the third pick, and they're gonna be wrong, and they're gonna be homeless. I guarantee.
Mike, I knew something was wrong when Jimmy the Finger started offering me free donuts from out of nowhere.
I'm telling you, you gotta watch it. Jimmy
the Finger is
the draft.
And I mean, since you were talking about making it rain, G keeps hitting me up to break up 100 to give him 100 singles.
G rolling back to the club.
Yo, G, I'm gonna sponsor you, man. Break me up late.
You
got any more of those dollar bills with your face on, like Usher?
You know what? All mines have a picture of the Joker and or Jill Scott on mine, but I
yes, sir.
Let me throw this in also.
Considering what Tony just said, in conjunction with the draft, which I'm doing some stuff on now. You know, last year they had over 600 cameras NFL putting across everybody being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more this year, right?
Oh, good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, let's indeed. There's going to be more this year. Even though they're going to be in Cleveland. And the folks in Cleveland, they're talking about turn up. They're going to turn up and turn out in Cleveland. I'll tell you that now. But
in other words, I've got to bet $1 million on Lawrence going overall number one just to make $50.
I've seen it. We have whales coming in here betting $500,000 on basketball games. One dude lost that amount on a jump shot that did not go in.
All the time.
I mean, that's crazy.
That
same Fulton ain't got nothing better to do. You better believe him. I got $500,000 in my slide. The last thing I'm going to do is bet on a motherfucking game and bet that kind of money. Is you crazy? Oh, come on.
Wait, wait, Michael. There's a guy in California, Bay Area, who bet $500,000 on the Eagles going in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles did not score in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Tonight, homer.
He was
homer. I mean, the highest paid that. Yeah, I'm sorry, G. Go ahead, bro.
He was homeless. That day he was homeless.
Damn right
homeless.
He was homeless. Dumbass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the best bet for the Super Bowl, it was the bet no one would take in that the Chiefs would not score a touchdown. Those who laid that money down got broken off.
Oh, you're right about that shit. That's a serious problem.
No touchdown Super Bowl for the Chiefs.
That's right.
Where you put up $1,000. You put $1,000 up, you may walk away with 5 racks, 10 racks.
That's right.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I believe with the upcoming draft, somebody is going to do something dastardly, because as much as these clowns want to interject where folks are going with the understanding of certain trades, somebody's going to do something stupid. It's going to be real interesting, the draft, and what's going to happen with this
draft
going on.
I said it's going to be
when
draft.
Is the draft?
I said 2 weeks from tomorrow. Patrick,
that's right.
As I said, I still have my – I don't believe it's butter on the sideline for the Jets. I think it's going to do it. I truly
well,
do.
Well, I'm telling you this. We know there will be some dastardly things done prior to the draft, but that's also Patrick's birthday, y'all. Patrick, what you got for your birthday as far as in addition to looking at the draft?
That's the second half of the day, watching the draft, just chilling out.
There you
man.
Go.
Just,
see, because my birthday
out.
Is the following day. That's right. That's exactly right.
See, but you're on a Friday, though.
Boy,
yeah,
I mean, why do I see many glasses with brown fluids for both of you brothers?
Eric, to be fair, prune juice prices are very low right now. So, you know, I'm just saying.
Prune juice margarita, please. That's
exactly.
Exactly. Put
it in a dirty glass. And Mike, you literally won't know if you're going or coming. Literally.
Yes, indeed.
Look, as far as I'm seeing this, you know, the NFL has gone out of its way to make the draft a true revenue stream. They've taken it on the road. They're making money off of that. They're making money off of fantasy football. They're making money off of all the new side dishes that they're able to work into this shit.
Oh, yeah.
But
Mike, just don't say make it rain. Please, just don't say make it rain. All I ask.
All that said, this is where they get into trouble. Okay. If you're going to run this thing like a gambling thing, then you got to first take care of your employees. Casinos teach their people all the cheats so that they don't get burnt, and they pay them well so they don't steal. And now the NFL has gone into this mindset where they think, okay, X, Y, and Z will give us greater revenue streams, but they're not looking at the theft factor. And we've seen referees steal games. We actually saw the NFL take back action on a game, the playoff game where we saw the really, really, really bad call, and the suckers got sucked into losing that money because they let it do a redo and more money than they try to put up and try to crush that bet. Because
and then,
this
and
is the gamble.
Then you had that 5-point Super Bowl, Mike.
That's right.
So they got all their money back.
They're going to work this game as many ways as they can. And I can tell you, I heard cussing. This was during the season. This was the game between Cleveland and Baltimore.
Oh,
Lamar
God.
Jackson hits the 4th and 7. He throws that 7 route, scores a touchdown.
Man.
And
don't
then they kick the ball off near the end of the game, and they're trying to loop the ball around, pass it to try to find the lane to get out. They get tackled in the end zone for their safety.
I found out the exact amount that that turnover was representative. $4,775,000 turned over on that one play. That's what we're talking about. That's some insidious shit right there.
In the words of Hyman Roth, the NFL is larger than U.S. Steel.
And just as ruthless.
Mike,
which makes it more intriguing, was we know the traditional nonsense that folks establish with who's going to be drafted where, and the fact, and I thought about this as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
They start promoting the draft in February.
Yes.
And saying the same four quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I produce stuff. I'm going, wait a minute. I know it sells TV. I understand that. But why are you talking about four quarterbacks the season just ended a week?
But that's the over and under on Justin Fields. So basically, Justin Fields is the hot bet now. Because all the other quarterbacks, so they're using them as this ultimate chess piece or a.k.a. chip on the roulette table on where he goes. Because that's a gambling piece right there. So, in other words, all this talk about Fields, he should be two, he should be three, all the black quarterback, is actually place your money on Fields and see where he goes, and that's you're going to be your wild card chip or your money maker. And he's the hot, where does he go, draft piece, bet money for this draft.
That's right.
Justin Fields is the top chip for the money maker to fill out where he's going to go, and that's why they're piecemealing them like that. Not because they care about all of their ratings. It's the betting piece called Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And also what Lewis Reddick said was yesterday about, you know, people arguing where a particular player is going to go. He said it best. He said, look, you got Justin Fields who's 6'3", 225 pounds, 227 pounds, rather, for the ball, 665 yards sideways. And he's talking about Matt Jones. He says, look, the 49ers, like any team, know who they want. All right?
Yeah.
They know who wants to play their system. And
I mean, how much
that,
is Mel Kiper getting, you know, so he can
run
his board and he can get his back check. Hey, Mel, you know, hey, Mel, we need your help here.
That's right.
And so Lewis Riddick said it all depends on what the team wants. He said, you can go and ask anybody who you want, but you know Lewis Riddick's been in the front office of Phillips. He should be a GM of a team right now. But he said based upon who the coach wants and can fit his system, that's who they're going to get, no matter how good or athletic somebody is.
Exactly. And that's 3D level, that surface level, the money making level, and the metaphysical tip is if you place the bet for Fields to be drafted by Belichick, that's the bingo number for the big win. If he's around and Belichick is sitting there, if you place a bet on that roulette wheel, number 10 to New England, I'm betting on red, white, and blue to New England, let the roulette table roll, and that falls into the Belichick lap. That's the big payoff there.
Pick up Reggie. Yes.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Okay. One thing Patrick brought up about this that we really haven't dwelt on. Remember, these owners, they know what they want. And even if they're assholes about it, they know what they're going to take and what they're not going to take.
I'm
talking to Patrick about this, this puts us in a different mind frame. Okay, now Lamar Jackson wasn't supposed to get picked in the first round, but he is perfect for Baltimore. It's a small market in comparison to others. He puts asses in the seats. He wins games, and he wins games spectacularly sometimes. And he's come back at times. So he's perfect for them. He's not too dark for Baltimore. He's too dark for New York. He's too dark for L.A. But he ain't too dark for Baltimore. And likewise, Patrick Mahomes, he's perfect for Kansas City. Smaller market, black quarterback. You know he's a light-skinned quarterback. He's perfect for them. They can handle him. His father played
in the middle of Kansas.
Baseball, so all of that fits in the script and whatnot. So See, he'll sit there and eat barbecue and all that shit for the rest of his life if he wants. And he's part owner of a baseball team. So he made his bones. And he's not a type B personality, or rather a type A personality. So they appreciate that. He fits with that Midwest vibe. But you know,
yep,
the quarterbacks, you know, you're not going to see a Joe Namath in New York again. And I ain't even talking about the play. They don't have the swag. You know, Darnold had no swag. You know, and whoever they get, they're not going to have any swag either. You know,
and
when the Jets pick
from BYU.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And when the Jets pick somebody like Chad Pennington, he fit their team because he looked like one of those motherfuckers from the suburbs who was taking the Long Island Railroad to go home.
And most importantly, Mike, he could spell Jets.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah.
where the hell is Kenny O'Brien when you need him?
I told you about the facts in the way, T. There you go again, T. I told you about that, T.
Well, he quietly Ted Pennington used to do the spelling bee back in the day. So that's another thing that affected him.
Right.
Well, Tony, you know he was a Rhodes Scholar candidate, so that has a lot to do with it.
Oh, sure.
Hello.
Sure.
Yeah. Can anybody tell me where the hell is Ray Lucas when you need him for the Jets?
He actually
works on SNY doing the Jets Journal or
MLG
or something.
Tony,
SNY.
Tony,
yeah, Ray Lucas.
Tony, let me tell you, Tony, he's gone.
Oh, they got rid of him. Wow.
They got rid of him last year because they didn't re-up the contract, and the show's ratings were down. And because one of the things about what was good about Ray. Ray didn't hold that back.
Exactly.
And
Ray was on point.
And guess
man.
What?
Yeah.
And guess what?
Yeah.
And guess what else? I believe he got a lot of that heat from him not being renewed from the coach of the year, Adam Gase. I think he had a lot to do with that. Or his people did. His marketing people.
Oh, yeah.
A thin-skinned white man in New York? That never happened.
I'm appalled,
man.
Ray was excellent.
He was.
I know Ray. I know Ray does Rutgers, so he does Rutgers.
Okay,
but
that's right.
That's his alma mater. I didn't see him, man. Hopefully, I'll see him in a couple of weeks when I'm trying to do the spring game in Rutgers.
Cool.
Hopefully, I'll see him there.
Hey, let's get him on the show,
excellent.
Guys. Let's get him on the
Ray
show. A thin-skinned white boy in New York.
Yeah, how about that?
Please.
But you know, I'll take thin-skinned white boys 1,000, Alex. Dan Orlovsky.
Daily double.
The over and under in that, man, is not topping that blue chip called the Justin Fields chip. We all need to throw our dollars in on that prediction, man.
In the first place. And that, all that did was exacerbate the thing that we have believed for a while, that somehow Todd McNugget or Kuiper or any of those other parasites are going to sit back and talk about, Eric Satterwhite is moving up the charts. You know, a young man from Sacramento State. He's because they cashed the check. You know that.
Yeah, there it is.
Like,
no, that.
You're going to hear
there
that.
There it is. You are 100. Mm-hmm. You are 100. Even on the NBA level, when you do a mock draft, and if you have NBA players, NBA GM's attention, yes, you do get that agent call, man.
Oh, come on.
You should move on to number 19.
Talk about it.
I've been there all the time. That's nothing unusual. Mike, we've said it for years. We've said it for years. The only people that lie more leading up to the draft are Republicans and Democrats.
Get lawyers and put the lawyers in there.
Insurance company lawyers.
Guys, what about Chris Paul with the Suns? Chris Paul got that team rolling, man.
Yes, he did. Doing a great job.
Chris Paul doing
great
a hell of a job out there.
Great job.
Monty Williams, man. Monty Williams is the head coach out there. Really put it together.
He goes.
Monty Williams has been through some stuff there, you know, when his wife got killed.
His wife died
in an accident.
Yeah, man.
He had to take a rest. But Monty Williams is,
you know, 100% legit, total coach, good brother.
Yes, he is.
You know, a guy, a man of faith, of whatever faith he chooses to. You know, father to his daughter, an outstanding leader, and a very, very good basketball coach. And that's why Chris Ball went to the desert, you know, because he coached him in New Orleans. And now he's doing work there. So Monty Williams has a lot.
He
calls that guy, but Monty Williams is really the stabilizing factor there in Phoenix.
Will he get coach of the year, or will they cop out and give it to Steve Nash?
Steve Nash ripped the Los Angeles Lakers off. You know, because he already had back nerve damage where he could never get on the floor. And he just took that money, took that Laker Association. While he was in L.A., he started investing in a lot of, you know, off-court things.
That's
and
it.
Making
that's
certain
it.
Things. Yeah, so, yeah, he did. He was networking this thing. He ripped the Lakers off.
Yeah.
That's foul.
Well, that ain't nothing new.
Here's a question. Here's a question to look at. Look at the Pelicans now. Look at New Orleans now.
They're coming.
You mean to tell me they couldn't come with the coach they had last year?
Of course not, Gentry. Man. Alvin was too successful, man. They couldn't have that.
The thing about Alvin is, you know, Rick, you know, again, all checks all the bulletins, likable brother, good coach. But Alvin always had that Denny Green unexplainable ending vibe with them with certain games. Like,
you gotta explain how did that. Come on, Eric. You gotta explain that now. Come on. You can let that go.
Well, Denny Green had some really incredible ventures at Giant Stadium and against the Atlanta Falcons. Goodness gracious, the way There were some suspect maneuvers in those particular games, and we didn't have to even hear him have to say the Bears are who we thought they are. They're exactly who they thought they were. And then Denny Green also, you know, maybe didn't articulate it the way Hubie did, the new coach down in Carolina. But he did have relationships
like
with Minnesota Vikings cheerleaders and had to pay for some preemptive strikes based on his relationships with Minnesota Vikings cheerleaders.
I thought y'all knew.
Patrick, I'm already
upset that you went after my favorite coach and sex kitten Stan Van Gundy. I mean, you can't.
Oh, Lord.
Uh-oh.
Well, okay, Patrick, since you set the table for the draft, and Eric has already alluded to whoever's going to get that bonus money. Patrick, let me ask you, who do you think? Who do you think, or where do you think Fields is going to go?
Here we go. I'm going to tell you something right now. Everybody put it in context. Lies and more lies. I don't place anybody in until like 2 days before the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that. I got my bookie on standby, Patrick, waiting for your word.
I'm on standby.
Okay.
I believe there's going to be another maneuver before the 24th. There's going to be another maneuver.
And
you know what? That's going to be perfect.
And I'll leave it at
that. We'll be on the night before.
Yep.
That'll be perfect.
Yep.
You know what?
Yeah.
I got to call. You know what?
Okay.
After this, Mike, remind me to call Jimmy the Finger after the show, please.
Mike, let me help with something. Not that I can't give you up what I think, but I've been running the league, coming to the league, you know, for 29 years. I know what they're doing. Going, wait a minute. I used to do that. Oh, he's going to be. I said, wait a minute. He did that? Wait, I talked to the beat reporter, man. We were sitting there, and he told me the beat report. Now, the beat reporters know something, but even right now, they ain't gonna say what happened. I'm at the point now. Do it 2 or 3 days before the draft. And particularly after Trevor Lawrence signs, that's when I have an idea what's gonna happen.
Yeah, you're right.
Also, the other caveat this year, guys, and we're seeing it in all the sports, you got to remember, they don't have the same sort of access because of COVID.
Yeah,
So there's going to be even more flavor in these lies this year that they tell.
That's true. There's going to also be more flavor in the insurance policies.
And Mike, let me throw this in. Watch out for Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay.
I know he'll come back.
I know they want him back. You know, and San Francisco needs a quarterback. I mean, it's pretty much a fair accompli. Garoppolo will probably
Jimmy
end up
G.
with the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Being
out here outside of Niner land, I mean, they love Garoppolo, you know, Paisano, Bay Area, you know.
I heard the porn stars love Garoppolo, Jimmy porn star.
Yeah, I mean, Garoppolo will be a hard move.
Eric, I'm with you 100%, but you know something? I think Shanahan and that GM got something going.
Lynch.
They could be a little
gun shy
Patrick,
with another brother, another brother
star.
After the
Come
after,
on,
after
man.
The cat, you know, after cat, man. So you know.
But Patrick, real quick about boxing. The New Jersey, not New Jersey, but Las Vegas is going to open up my pack house. What the ham sandwich going on, man? Something wrong,
because
man. They're going to have COVID-19 rolling.
Some people are making some money. Now there are some fields in New York now that they're going to open up to you. You have to show identification that you had a shot.
The vaccination card. The vaccination
card. That's right.
The way they document the fake IDs up there, I can imagine them fake shot cards.
I'm just telling you.
They probably print them in downtown China as we speak. Made in China. Here's a card. Made in China.
Well, I mean, the five families do have the drywall contracts on lock, so they may be able to do some replication as well.
Yes, indeed. So
you sound like a sex politician from Florida for sex trap.
They got my phone. Oh, Lord,
hey,
they got my phone.
Hey, and his boy.
A man and his phone should never part.
And found out his boy has been talking to the feds for over a year, and he didn't know it.
Oh, shit.
Correct.
What are you trying to get that back to his partner?
I'd like 17-year-old girls for 600, please, Alex. In that category, one of the biggest mouths and one of the biggest acolytes for Trump got tricked by his own prevail. Travail.
Hey,
look,
all I got to know is Saturday
said,
Night Live got him down to a T.
I've always said, the more pious they are, the bigger the freak they are. So now he's got his boys and some little girls. And I don't know if he's done a R. Kelly and said to call him daddy, but you know how convenient it is they did like to just toss this aside. I never paid for sex with any girl. Yeah, right. Okay,
yeah.
So this is part of that male white nonsense that they always do.
You know something, Mike?
Yes.
He ain't the only one.
No, I know he's
the
only
one.
When they do catch him, he's gonna grow an afro and wear a dashiki, and he's gonna make like Nino Brown. I ain't the only one. If I go
there
down, everybody on the line too, of course, Mike.
That also means that Akeem Akbar becomes the NBA commissioner the day after.
Oh hell yeah, the pretty motherfucker, no question.
Well then, if we're moving at this rate of speed, we might as well go sit your $5 ass down too before I make change.
There you go.
Is that before the knife goes in his hand?
That was right after. I never liked your ass, you pretty motherfucker. That was around that
That's
time.
That's right. But you know what? If somehow Justin Fields missed that whole first round, it is going to be like Nino Brown. How, what happened, mm-hmm. y'all?
That's the hot ship in the draft, man.
Don't, man. Don't none of y'all know nothing? You know what's going on.
Don't none of y'all know nothing.
That's right.
$1,000 a day I lost. $1,000 a day
mm-hmm. G-Money knows
that
something. Right. Oh, yeah. G-Money
knows something.
Right. G-Money
knows.
Put it this way, Mike. The phrase "bet black" has taken on a whole new meaning.
You ain't kidding. There's no doubt about that.
I'm so jealous.
We got
you guys.
We got
y'all
a lot. Stay tuned.
I'm
look
so
forward
jealous.
To no question about that. Gentlemen,
so jealous,
I thank you for some wisdom tonight. Let's get the pot stirred for final
I
thoughts,
hope
please.
Doing okay. Rhonda doing okay? Are you here from Rhonda?
Well, she's in the motherland right now, as in South Africa, which is probably one reason why the connection was impossible to make tonight. But we got Rhonda's back. She knows when she can holler back.
God bless.
So we all good. And when Rhonda does come on, she will catch us up with everything that's been going on since. But Reggie, lead it off.
Yes,
please
sir.
Give us some good food for thought.
Well, I'm sure everybody's seen the video of the Virginia State graduate that was a lieutenant stood up by Barney Five, old cracker. You better be scared of me, nigga. You better be scared of me. I go down that road every day on my job. And trust me, those are speed traps. And the sad part about it is that T-Mac had a great point. Kaepernick takes a fucking knee, and that's disrespectful to the officer. But yet here's a black man driving a SUV that wasn't even top of the line. It was just a straight black SUV with silver rims.
Yep.
It wasn't like it was a kind of Escalade tricked out.
Mm-hmm.
And the damn license was taped right on the right side of the corner where the body cam showed. And this clown walked around. Mr. Barney Five had an incident where he pulled another black man out 5 years ago at Smithfield Packing House, the hall place down Smithfield, Virginia. You go down there, it's very depressed. Eating a hog says, get me out of here. That's how it's depressing.
I know that's
I'll just say in closing, I'm really upset again that our HBU coaches that grind the pavement do not get shot. Even though Tennessee State might be an HBCU, this is bullshit.
Yep.
And I said, and I say it again, that when the presidents and administration and other people at HBCUs do not respect athletics, all they want to do is do a quick drive. We'll see more Morris Browns. Don't know about Morris Brown at St. Paul's? Read. That's all I got to say.
Yes,
I know
about St. Paul
does.
As well.
Yeah, I know this panel knows, but you know we got gremlins in it and stealing our shit. I know Ian saying, I know you're listening. Fuck you. Sorry, guys.
That's right.
I mean, there's a huge bandwidth. There's a huge bandwidth of biters and jockers, man. So they're just only one of many. My goodness. I mean, you get to the point you're hearing direct quotes and shit. Like, damn. I mean, didn't I just hear Brother G say that shit? So,
man. Yeah. Reggie, like we say, from the mouse to the cheese,
Reg,
you can say what you please because we know them boys ain't shit.
Say, Reg, I got wind of somebody who was in the military who made it very plain. Because, you know, this happened in December. He said, if you think the military didn't tap somebody on the shoulder in that town, if you ever mess with one of our boys again, this is what's going to happen to all y'all. You don't know what's going on. Because the military was pissed. He's a lieutenant colonel.
There you go.
Colonel, and still ain't got no, still no respect. Damn.
No. The guy told me he was a lieutenant colonel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the guy that told me this to me was a little turn. He said the military, he said, now, that guy might have been suspended, but he said somebody made a call to make sure his ass got fired.
You got that shit right.
It's called fire him or put, we will put your town off limits to all military personnel.
There you go, Fred. There you go.
I like that, too.
And you know what? It will manifest. It's just a matter of time. It will manifest.
Well, first of all, I'm glad to see that Morris Brown is seemingly getting back on track. I have some good memories of their band, their real band, not the one in the movie, and some people that I knew who went there. You know, and it just there again, though, it's just another situation where we have to tell our own story, because there are people out there who even now, everybody trying to get on the HBCU bandwagon, but they only want to be on what they've considered to be the top shelf or the most vulnerable. And we can't wait on them to do what they do, because they've already shown they're only going to be there as long as it takes to get the wind to shift.
Yep.
When the wind shifts, we're going to go their separate ways, and, you know, so be it. Also, you know, as we have are looking at over the last, 3 weeks, we've seen more exposure than we've ever had, especially on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And although I've done work with them and I still have somewhat of a contract with them, they're not my favorite. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other so good thing, but, you know, that is what it is. I didn't open the door, so if it explodes, it's not on me. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to say is this. You know, as we move forward and prepare to finish out this year, athletically, there's a Baseball World Series going to be occurring this year, some other things. I got to sit in on a meeting on Monday night with the HBCU professionals and T-Mac, know the rest of the name. But anyway, but I got contacted last week, and I decided I would sit in. And it was quite interesting to see several people that I knew already. And then I got to meet some people that I hadn't met before, but I've been here. And it's the kind of thing that we need to be doing. So if T-Mac can even get you the information, Mike, or I can get it to you what I got. It's something worth, because you don't cover HBCUs the way we do, but still, your show is part of your show is platform for things in reference to HBCU. So it's, you know, it's designed to help us help them. And we're still selling books. And,
yes, sir.
At blackheadsreview.com. We have the sports encyclopedia, HBCU football history, along with the stories of Claflin College and Livingston College at Kobe. Livingston is beginning to pick up finally, as well as Claflin, because a lot of the people that were involved with this were older people, and I was informed that most of them got their vaccination now.
There you go.
I was waiting on the single shot, and then they told us 2 days ago, well, we can't give you that right now. We got it on hold. But anyway, we're gonna get that taken care of. If I got to take two shots, I got to take two shots. But anyway, you know, this
sounds like
moving forward. Thank you, brother.
I want to know www.blackheritagereview.com. Buy books, buy books, buy books. T-shirts, pick a brat. All the good stuff. Reading is fundamental. Patrick, please.
Two things. One thing in particular. Fred, Eric, and Reggie. Somebody I talked to this week just said this, that there's a possibility, because of what's happening with the advent of attention to HBCUs, CBS might sniff something athletically.
Sure.
With CBS Sports, not the major network, but
Sports Network. Oh, okay. Cool.
So we'll see what happens.
The cable network, right? The cable sports network.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thought,
right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they
planted the seed with the Winston-Salem thing.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that. So I didn't know that. But somebody hit me to that. Oh, okay. What I was going to talk about today or tomorrow, there's going to be a vote on by NCAA for full transparency for undergraduates to transfer to school one time, anytime they want to, for one time.
Yes.
And the trick is that you don't have to worry about, you know,
well, I got to do it because my mama said, no, you can go anywhere you want to go.
No hardship, correct.
No hardship. And here's, it applies to, of course, football, mental illness basketball, also baseball and ice hockey. Other sports, you can just go when you want to go, nothing happens. Somehow those sports that make some money were under that label. But here's the undercurrent from what I see. When I see that it might be another aspect of something trickling down, I hate to say trickle, but segue into some aspects of HBCU athletics, because guys at major universities who ain't getting no time, I get no time, I'll just leave. I'd rather play somewhere all the time than sitting up in someplace else.
That's right.
I see it directly from my alma mater. Ohio State got four quarterbacks, all of them good. Ain't but two on play. And that's for every major university across the country. So we're going to see how that flushes out.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they're doing it like that. But and here's the last part of that. Now, the NCAA was supposed to do it in January, but they had that antitrust system, a problem they had.
That's right.
So they tried to hold it off. In the meantime, they said, government said, you better take care of something. So that this is the first point, the first step in getting that taken care of, because eventually what's going to happen is them five major conferences, NCAA is getting a weaker position every day.
It's hot. It's definitely hot.
High school seniors got to start going to JUCO.
You know,
a lot of them ain't getting no contracts.
That's you know it's hurting them because they can't stockpile anymore. I mean, they can't stockpile
and
anymore.
All come
the gray shirts and the white shirts. Yeah.
That's right.
And I hope particularly and from the basketball end, because some of these guys can play and they get no time. You mean, go to HBCU and get some playing time and really make something happen. But that's another story.
That's right.
You know, having done some minor league GM work, it reminds me of brothers who would call me up in that ABA thing and say, Coach, man, I got to be real with you. I just need to play a couple of games so I can get some film before I go overseas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's marketing. That's smart, man.
And I'm like, okay, man, you know, this
that's
could
right.
be your jump
Amen,
off, man, but I got to guarantee we go 3-0 before I release the tape.
There you go.
Wait, Eric, they want a tape from you, but they average 2 points a game, but I'm going to go with season play.
You're right. Coach, man, I know you're looking for some dudes that got that dog in them, man. I'm your dude, man, but to keep it 100, I just need some tape.
There you go.
Please.
Well, you know what, Eric?
That was the combo.
Since you punctuated that so nicely, please carry on. Throw something else in the pot.
Yes, sir. I mean, you know, I caught the new coaching hire. I was no names and references anymore at the University on Jefferson Street in Nashville, Tennessee. And I just started. I time traveled there for a minute. I went back decades and took me back that, you know, with a couple of brothers I was walking through for my first, you know, TSU home football game. Can't remember the opponent. But I can remember, you know, the stadium was on campus, not too far from the athletic dorm I stayed on, and we're walking over, and I just hear this rhythmic tone for the first time on the campus my parents met in the hometown of my mother, Nashville, and we're walking over to the stadium, you know, for the first time, and all I can hear is T, for Tennessee, STATE, U, University. TSU, and I'm like, what the fuck is that? It had me bobbing my head and rocking as I was walking over to the stadium. You know, I'm like, okay, that's different. And it was thunderous, and it was everyone was participating. You know what I'm saying? I was loving it, man. It was rhythmic. It was tunic. And it was, I guess, because, again, my parents met there. It was, you know, rocking down in my cellular structure, you know, because it sounded like something they may have heard. You know what I'm saying? Something like they may have heard. And then I get into the stadium, you know, and they want to hit us up. We show, you know, we're jocks. They let us in because we get the athletic pass. You know, get to the stadium, the band's out there in the field. And, you know, I run into this guy that beeline for me. And, you know, I'm just there. And it was Ralph Boston. you know, the Olympics from the 68 Olympics, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's history.
I mean, I'm like literally there, like for the first weekend, he beelined me, and he goes, "You Diamond Son," because they called my father Diamond Jim, first name James, who was known as Diamond Jim. I said, "How's Diamond doing?" I went, "Yeah, he's cool, you know." And tell him Ralph, you know, gave me his business card. I think he was working at Knoxville Insurance or something at the time. Broke bread with me, started telling me certain things, you know, looking me up and down. But I felt like family, you know, for someone I first met. Then I realized who this person was, you know. And then you look at the game on the field, you see the legendary Coach Merritt, you see Coach Gilliam. 747 Adams is just ripping shit up and down the field.
Lord.
Kenner Brew's running over MFers. You know, and it's like this whole vibe and energy that it wasn't just an athletic event. It was traditional. It was familial. It was historical. And it was legacy. And it was not just going to a college campus to watch an effing game. So when I see that TSU helmet on that dais in this interview for this new head coach, I'm like looking at dude and I'm like, you know, despite what you may have done in the past, you have no idea the turf you're about to hit. And you better show the right respect. And if you don't know how to show right respect, you're not going to make it, homie. Because, you know, you hear this name when I was watching the Final Four. And this struck me again. I call these surprises. And I, you know, and in the most profound legacy way. And I know how broadband, the Final Four, how many people watch. And I hear Jim Nantz say that Kelvin Sampson of Houston, when they were playing in the Final Four, is the winner of the John B. McLendon Coach of the Year Award.
I heard it.
That's
it.
Yep. All right. Long overdue.
And you're sitting there with Raftery and Hill, who deals with Krzyzewski. It's not named after Bobby Knight, Adolph Rupp, John Wooden. You name them, Judd Heathcote, J.B., or you name them, to the John B. McLendon.
That's right.
Year Award.
That's right.
Kelvin
Sampson.
I'm an asshole, but what took so long? They should have been named
I like that.
You know, and so, well, to your point, Reggie, my father is still very much alive and was very much a starting player for his teams and very much part of that induction team.
Oh, I heard
Smith. His attitude is completely directly towards yours. That's some bullshit. Coach McLendon's been, or he says it, Matt Linden. He doesn't never say Matt Linden. Coach Matt Linden has been dead for 30 plus years. And they operate from a premise where they don't need that shit. You hear what I'm saying? They're not looking for that shit. You hear what I'm saying? And so when we say what they say, you know, I hear this shit about, oh, they always say the fuck who they are, because that generation never opined for that. They never gave a fuck. You know what I'm saying? Because they stood in their own legacy. They knew who they are. So what's interesting to me is watch those ghosts, the ghosts of these legends, in a very positive way of using the word ghosts, making these moves where you're going to represent their history. So all of a sudden, this HBCU is on the dais. It's known more than anyone else knows creative history, but it was all built on that legacy. And I close out T for Tennessee. S-T-A-T-E-U. University. T-S-U.
Yes, sir.
From me to you with a friendly boot. Speaking of ghosts,
and Mike, I'm going to throw one thing in, Mike, about Tennessee State. I was fortunate enough to go out with the Taco Bell. I know about Tennessee State.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
Just now.
There you go.
I'll leave it at that.
I got to chime in. I can wax poetic. So Wilma Rudolph, was a good friend of my mother, but I never knew his Wilma in conversations because everyone called her Skeeter. Right? They called her Skeeter. That was her nickname. And the love they have for Wilma, but they talked to her like one of the sisters, not Wilma the gold medalist, not Wilma who China F. Kennedy made sure when she came back from the Olympics had a one-on-one meeting, not Wilma, you know, who, you know, all things being had a friendly relationship with one Cassius Clay, but the whole time the greatest sprinter on track is
as an understatement. Friendly, that's true. An understatement. That same Wilma Rudolph that when black folks, white folks sat down
Skeeter.
And celebrated
her. The TSU name for her amongst her classmates was Skeeter. They called her Skeeter.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Hey, and yes, I forget Tricky Tom
the
Harris was
our
the
brother.
Track coach there in Tennessee from Virginia Union.
Yes, sir.
Don't forget
yes,
that.
Sir.
Well,
yes, sir.
The nickname for our brother here is Mr. Biggs. Is he still around?
Yeah, he's here.
Rolling on
the IG.
Mr.
So
Big, double G.
Okay.
Double G.
Uh-oh, Gary's pissed. Uh-oh, I can hear his voice. He's pissed. Uh-oh.
So that is great. We'll be the first team in the Stanley Cup back in 4 years. Oh, baby. We have you guys. Hey, Dennis. So, what up? Thank you for real. We need to get your defense. Thank you for the best defense in the NBA. Kings will win the Stanley Cup in 2021. Okay.
Well. Where's Mike? We lose Mike?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
G, what's the next music show you got scheduled?
We got
Well, we're on air tomorrow. Where we are, Tony, throw something in the pot, and then I'll give you the preview.
Just a question.
How many singles do you need, T Mac? That's the question.
I'll have my man get back with your man tomorrow. As we all know, one Bernard Madoff saw his
Uh-oh.
Maker.
Yeah. Yep.
B.
Hey, Mike.
And he wasn't happy.
Well, let me put it this way. I'll just come out and say it. You think the reporters asked all the Jewish folks whose money he took away from, hey,
yep.
Do you forgive them?
Fuck no.
No. No.
Listen.
No.
They knew the only reason he's in jail is that he stole money from Jews. That's it. He could have gone away to Israel to the law of return and all of that. Maybe with a kind of gobbledygook he did in terms of the confidence explanation, they wouldn't have touched him. He stole from his own people. That's why his ass is in jail. That's why his ass died in jail.
You ain't wrong. John Elway was one of many athletes that got their greedy asses ripped off by investing with Mr. Madoff. What Madoff did real quickly to that, you know, was he created his own economy. He was masterminding his friggin' own dogs on big board, and he was having fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
He had, like, millions of checks just buried on his desk. He couldn't even keep up.
Sure did.
He played off their greed, though. He played off their greed at the same time.
So basically, Elway was just as good. Eric, Elway was just as good as investor as he was as a GM and owner, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote that on Tim Tebow. He made
commercials about his high
Tim Tebow online, too.
No shit. But yeah, so much for Madoff. He made off with a lot of money. Made off with his own people's money. If he had taken from the black community or the other community, nobody would have said shit. That's what bothers me about that.
Did you say Pepsi Cola? I'm sorry.
Hello. That's right. That's why I was raised not to speak over the dead, so I'll let that lay right there. Well, brothers, I appreciate everybody's input tonight. I'm going to give you just a taste of something that I heard recently. Some really dick dastardly shit going on where some cocksuckers in high school actually did a slave auction. They were selling brothers online. Now, this is from the African Diaspora News Channel. I want to give proper credit. Philip Scott's been doing this a long time.
I have much respect for the brother. This is the piece. We're going to go out with that Thursday night.
Okay.
Tomorrow evening, 9 o'clock, James Brown versus Bob Marley.
Yeah, man.
Ain't no country be love. Ain't no be begging.
What kind
is what's going to be happening.
Ain't no contest.
Ooh.
That's
contest,
right.
Man. Come on, man.
It's a first-round matchup, Patrick. Yeah, I think like that. Anyway, I'm going to let it
knock
lay.
Out.
That's right.
Hey, Marley was so heavy that the British government called his music the prophecies of Bob Marley.
Yeah, man. That's exactly right.
Literally. Literally.
Yeah, man.
Literally. They see, that's how they seen him.
Well,
listen,
you know
to
what
his,
they say
listen
about
to his, listen to his bump, man. It's coming from a whole other level.
Listen to his bump. That's exactly right. Everybody else, please. Go safe. Stay safe. Once you get from A to B and back to A-OK, wash your hands. Wash your ass. Wear a mask, please. Watch your back.
Word.
And of course, the timing is so fucked up, I can't get this thing to start.
So, you know, we see all these, you know, different, you know, things in the media. We're talking about these rise in hate crimes, you know, on Asians and stop Asian hate and all of that. But they don't talk about the constant hate crimes that's happening against black people. Oh, no, that's just normal. That's supposed to happen to y'all. That's why we don't talk about it. You know, you guys getting killed by a race soldier, that's we don't talk about it, but we talk about it in the guise of trying to get ratings, you know, getting money off your desk, and then we want to get other finances, you know, with Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. You know, that's why we talk about your death. Not that we care about it, we just know we can make a lot of money off of you, you know, when that happens. But you have, you know, the school district. And I want you to hear, you know, when you're going to have some white supremacist students that's going to sit up here, have a slave auction that they're participating in, you know, with black students. Let's go ahead and roll that clip.
It's possible, and how am I still surprised?
But seeing it goes deeper.
Calling it the N-word slave trade slash auction.
Students at Daniel Ninth Grade Academy in Aledo putting prices on children of color and trading them online.
Just, it makes me sick from the standpoint that I ask myself, who do they think they are, right? What gives them the right to feel that they can do that to someone else?
One student worth $100, another just $1 because they didn't like his hair.
And now, of course, I was not shocked, honestly, because of the community that we live in. And
it hurt one student enough to tell school leaders and even post about it online. District leaders sent a note home to tell parents the students were disciplined, but some were even angrier with how the note was written.
Calling it cyberbullying, bullying versus racism, they're condoning the behavior, and that is the piece that really gets under my skin.
It softens the blow for those that may be uncomfortable with the conversation of racism, and we need to stop doing that.
Online, someone told the school board member Forrest Collins it was a hate crime, not boys being boys. He wrote he agreed 100%. Superintendent Susan Bone issued a new statement just hours ago saying racism and hatred did not have a place in the district. They're taking action and making sure students feel loved.
I'm still a bit disappointed with the email because I do think it still stops short of calling it hate speech.
But Mark Grubbs told us the problems are bigger than this one instance. He pulled his three kids from Aledo ISD.
A lot of racism being called out of his name, et cetera, and it got to the point where he didn't mind fighting. And that just didn't sit right with me and my wife.
So you heard the school district called it cyber bullying and harassment, not white supremacy, not hate crime, which it is. Now, we're being told that if a black person even shuns an Asian person, like saying, I don't really want to be around an Asian person, that's a hate crime. These white supremacists sit up here not only shunning, using the N-word, sitting up here having slave auction sales online, talking about selling black students, And that's called cyberbullying, and that's called harassment. So cyberbullying and harassment for you, but when it comes to everybody else, it's a hate crime. Matter of fact, even if you don't intervene when a crime is happening, like in New York, to an Asian person, you're going to be shamed, and basically, you know, you're supposed to jump in and save everybody, okay? But nobody could come save you. And nobody's shamed why you're not being saved. You understand? See, the reason why they do this is because you have a whole society that lets them know from the moment they get into this world that your life has no value, that this society look at you as the enemy, public enemy number one.
Yeah,
they teach not you and also everyone else around the world that to hate you, it's okay to hate you. It's okay to marginalize you. It's okay to discriminate against you. It's okay to treat you less than human. It's okay to do human rights violations to you as black people. It's okay because the system has let them know that. See, the reason why